Okay, we're on the 8 a.m. agenda item. Sea Scallop Committee Report, tab 4. I believe there's also some documents handed out when you sat down yesterday, if you haven't incorporated them into your binder. And I will turn it over to Sally McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the chair mentioned, all the scallop materials are behind tab 4. Additional information has been provided this morning as well, including slides that Deirdre will go through shortly on Framework 21. What we need to do today is to review and approve Framework 21 for final action and submission, and in the context of that and the groundfish Framework 44 discussion, to discuss the yellowtail sub-ACL allocation for the scallop fishery. The scallop committee met on November 3rd, and I'll have several motions as we go through the discussion today from the committee providing recommendations to the council on alternatives to be included in Framework 21. Document 1 is the framework document that everyone should have, and Deirdre has annotated it throughout to include the committee and advisory panel recommendations for actions within that. The primary purpose of the amendment, as described on page 15, is specifications for fishing year 2010, including setting the ABC as required for under the Magnuson Act, and compliance with the first RPM, or reasonable and prudent measure, and terms and conditions required by the recent biological opinion on sea turtles. The framework also includes area rotation adjustments if the council sees fit to change the areas that are available, the access areas that are available for fishing, and some other adjustments to potentially to the observer set-aside program and to the general category ITQ program, as it will be, is planned to be implemented effective March 1st, 2010. So that's the scope of the framework, and I will turn it over to Deirdre to step us through some more of the details of the framework, and we'll pause as we go through with motions from the committee. As many people have discussed, there's a lot of overlap between the scallop action and the groundfish action. We'll see, obviously, what the will of the council is as far as having the discussion on how to address the yellowtail and the overlap between the two fisheries there. As we get to the conclusion of the Framework 21 discussion, it may make sense to leave things open as we go into the groundfish discussion. And once in groundfish we've concluded the discussion about yellowtail, then go back and essentially button things up with Framework 21 once we get everything reconciled. Hopefully that'll all become clear at the end, but just wanted to mention that there will be some overlap toward the end of this discussion between the scallop and groundfish actions. So with that, I'll turn it over to Deirdre, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, everyone. A copy of my presentation is document 11. It was handed out this morning. And there are copies in the back as well. This is the final action meeting for Framework 21, which is a one-year action for 2010 fishing year. Just want to briefly make sure you have all the documents that you need for today's discussion. All of the measures in Framework 21 are included in document number 1, behind tab 4, as well as the analysis on the scallop resource impacts and EFH impacts. There was another document copied separately, document 1A, which has all the economic impacts. These you received in the mail, and hopefully you got a chance to become a little more familiar with them. Document 6 is also a bunch of different analyses together, impacts on protected resources, impacts on bycatch, and social environmental impacts of Framework 21 measures. There is one other document we handed out this morning that has to do with some potentially additional reasonable and prudent measures related to the turtle topic that we may or may not get into later today, depending on the will of the council. That does have some additional potential alternatives and analysis related to RPMs. There are some decision documents. Believe it or not, there are not a lot of decisions you have to make today related to Framework 21. They happen to all be difficult decisions, but there's not that many. And there are some summary tables prepared for you, similar to Amendment 15 that we did at the last meeting, that highlight all the different measures, some input from the committee and advisory panel, as well as a description of a brief summary of the different impacts. Those are documents 7A and 7B to kind of put all the analysis in one place for you. But, of course, you know, the documents themselves have much more detail. So those are a bunch of tables. Lastly, as Sally mentioned, after we get through Framework 21, this is related to some decisions you're going to make later this afternoon related to yellowtail sub-allocations for this sub-component in this fishery. And document number 8 is a memo from staff summarizing some revenue impact information you requested at the September council meeting. And Tom Neese is going to take over at that point and provide that presentation, as well as document 12 is a copy of that presentation. So you can hold those on for later, probably closer to lunch when we get into that topic. Okay, very briefly, I did summarize what's in Framework 21 at the September Council meeting, so I'm going to do it rather quickly today just to refresh your memory. There are three primary management issues included in Framework 21: the general fishery specifications for the 2010 fishing year. This year is the first year we have to specifically set ABC as required by the Reauthorized Magnuson Act, so there's a section about that. This is also the first time the council needs to comply with the recent reasonable and prudent measure related to the turtle biological opinion. We've discussed this several times at the council level, so there's a bunch of information in this framework related to that. There are some area adjustments needed this year. We do this in all of our framework actions to basically consider whether we need to change the access area schedule and identify how many access area trips should occur in this fishing year. And in addition, there is a potentially new access area that could be closed on George's Bank in the Great South Channel related to this topic. The last management issue for the framework is pretty minor adjustments to the observer set-aside program that came out earlier this year in terms of minor adjustments to that program. So, starting back with the first one. The ABC, in September, the council heard a report from the SSC that ABC for this fishery, for this fishing year, should be set at approximately 29,578 metric tons, which is equivalent to 75.2 million pounds. So that, you already heard that report. It's a recommendation the council really doesn't do much with at that point. So basically, we set our targets, our fishing targets, at some amount lower than that. But that is our ABC for this fishing year. There is no action, of course, in this document. There are two unique aspects this year that I just want to point out related to no action. And if you recall, the IFQ program that we implemented in Amendment 11 is not fully effective yet. We do hear from the agency that they still expect it to be effective by March 1st, the start of the fishing year. But this document does have to include measures in case the IFQ program is not in place in time. There would be different measures in place for 2010 fishing year. The major ones, of course, would be that the allocation amount for the general category fishery would be 10% compared to 5%, and the limited access general category fishery would continue to be under a quarterly hard tack rather than their IFQ program for the entire fishing year. So those are two major differences, of course. The document includes them in case that happens, but again, the committee's been checking in with the agency, and it does still seem that by the end of the year, all appeals should be finished, and this, you know, would maybe not be an issue. The other thing I want to point out is this framework is going to be delayed. It will not be in place by March 1st. We discussed this at the council meeting in September. It will more likely be implemented at some point in June. So there are some measures in here to address any potential increases in catch due to that delay. We have some measures in here to hopefully mitigate that. So, leaving no action, we get into the actual alternatives for the document. There are four total allocation scenarios considered within Framework 21. We have two of them that consider the new closure in the Great South Channel, and we have two of them that consider it not to close. And then within each of those, there's a higher F option. So if you get used to these acronyms, NCLF stands for no closure with an F of 20.2 and no closure with an F of 0.24. So we basically have a higher F and a lower F option for both approaches, whether you close the channel or not. The next slide is just a table, a quick summary of the projected catch associated with each of the scenarios, as well as the full-time days at sea you could expect for each of those scenarios in terms of total days at sea and open areas for the year. You'll see there's a pretty big difference in terms of projected catch between the four scenarios, ranges from 4.15 million pounds up to 53.5 million pounds, so over a 10 million pound difference. And in terms of days at sea, again, there's a pretty big range from 29 days at sea to 51 days at sea. I just want to take a minute to point out, in general, why the allocation and projected catches for 2010 are lower than they have been in recent years, just to give people a frame of reference. There is one less access area trip included in all of these scenarios. Typically, in recent years, we've been having five access area trips per year. Fisheries gotten pretty used to that. It's a pretty nice setup. However, this year, all four of these allocations include four trips. And that has to do with the abundance available and other issues. So right there, going from five trips to four trips brings down your total catch quite a bit, since each access area opening brings in about 6 million pounds. Excuse me. The other issue, the reason these days at sea are a bit lower than recently, is that we've looked at the updated projections from the fishing year for the last 2 years, and F is higher than we wanted it to be. So the F, although it's preliminary, is coming in higher than what we projected the target to be in 2008 and 2009. So a general reduction in effort should occur in this framework to address that we've been pretty over the target in the last few years. So those two things combined brings down the catch and days at sea allocations for next year. Very quickly, I also want to just explain, in all the work that the PDT did for Amendment 15 in terms of ACLs and addressing uncertainty, we had a lot more time and spent more effort exploring these uncertainty issues and why our projections are different than what actually happens. And what we learned in that process is there are two major differences in our projections this year compared to the last time around. And the first one has to do with, this is a little technical, but the assumptions we use for catch per unit of effort, catch per day, basically our assumptions, is much higher now than what we used in the previous framework. So while these days at sea are lower, we're projecting a much higher catch per day. So this, in effect, brings the days at sea allocations down for next year. The other thing is, we in recent frameworks have been using the equivalent of about 325 vessels that we think have the full-time equivalent vessels that would use days at sea in the fishery. When we did this work in Amendment 15 and looked at that more closely, we found that the number is actually closer to 340. So those additional 15 vessels that we weren't really taking into account in last year's framework, we have in this year's framework. So we hope and expect that our projections are much better this time. But again, all of these things all at once are bringing down the day at sea allocations related to each of these scenarios. So the PDT recognizes this is a hard pill to swallow all at once, one less trip, lower days at sea needed, but these are the final projections that were analyzed. There are a few other measures related to the limited access fishery that do not require any decision by the council. This is the continuation of the yellowtail bycatch tack within the Nantucket Lightship closed area, which will be open in 2010. This would remain as it has. It would be monitored through the year, and the area would close when the yellowtail catch is reached. And vessels would be given a day at sea compensation in open areas, roughly around 5 days at sea, it looks like, from some of the projections. There's also an adjustment in there. If the IFQ program is delayed, the limited access fishery would have to be reduced by about 4 days at sea each to account for that additional allocation to the general category fishery. Again, this is hopefully something that isn't going to occur because the plan will be in place in time, but we have the alternative in there in case it is not. Moving on to general category, all of these, this section of the document starting on page 28, again, do not require any action by the council because they are things that have been in the plan. They're just included in here for description, really, and to explain the different measures that will be in place. The general category fishery would receive a fleet-wide total number of access area trips in each of the access areas that open in 2010. I should mention, just back up a second, the four different scenarios have different day at sea allocations associated with them, but they all have the same exact access area schedule, which is four trips, two in Elephant Trunk, one in Delmarva, which is also in the Mid-Atlantic, and one in Nantucket Lightship. So all four of them are identical in that sense. The framework also specifies what the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack should be. Again, this is the same as it was from Amendment 11 and Framework 19. And the incidental target tack also, the PDT is recommending, remain at 50,000 pounds. The only new thing related to the general category section of this document, the council could consider a motion later related to allowing general category vessels to lease portions of their IFQ allocations. Currently, the amendment has the vessels do it in full units, so you have to lease out your entire allocation at once. The committee was interested at the last council meeting to explore an alternative that would allow for partial leasing during the fishing year. So there are some straw man alternatives that we've worked on with NIMS in terms of language that could go in the document if you decide to include it, and that's in document number 9, and we'll get to that later in the presentation. So very quickly, to let you know, the Great South Channel closure, the area I'm talking about, is on the screen. It's also in figure 3 on page 31 in the document. It's essentially kind of a triangular area between closed area 1 and closed area 1 and Nantucket Lightship. You can see that is recruitment that's on the screen from the survey this summer, and certainly a good majority of the recruitment in open areas on George's Bank would be, in fact, included in this new closed area. So, moving on from the first objective of setting the days at sea and the access area schedule and whether you close the channel or not, the next major issue in this framework is to comply with the reasonable and prudent measures related to the turtle biological opinion. On the screen is just, again, the italicized actual RPM language that was from the biological opinion. And just to summarize, by 2010, the BIOP requires that NIMS must limit the amount of allocated limited access scallop fishing effort that can be used in the Mid-Atlantic during the periods in which turtle takes have occurred. And again, restrictions on fishing effort shall be limited to a level that will not result in more than a minor impact on the fishery. So this was basically the charge for the framework. This figure shows you the area of the RPM, which is essentially all the darker shaded statistical areas of Long Island South, including all the way down to the North Carolina border. So that's where this limit is supposed to occur. The PDT developed four different alternatives to comply with this RPM. and they're summarized on the board. And the committee looked these over in late summer and the fall as well and approved them. So then we went into starting to analyze them during this fall. In general, the first alternative would be a restriction on the number of open area days at sea that each vessel could use on an individual basis within the Mid-Atlantic. We looked at two different options for seasons in terms of one starting from mid-June through mid-October and the other one going from mid-June through the end of October. There's an explanation of these different seasons and why we looked at them and so forth in the document. We also looked at two different alternatives for the area, and that was based on some analysis the PDT did related to sea surface temperature and sort of more expected locations of where turtles may be during the summer and fall. Ultimately, that work ended up coming down to, for just the month of June, you could limit this RPM area kind of just south of Long Island. There could be argument to not include that in an RPM because the sea surface temperature doesn't match with when loggerheads, the temperature they're usually associated with. So that was a small point for just the 1 month. PDT didn't spend a ton of time beyond that really discussing which way is better or worse, but it was included for analysis. The second alternative would restrict the number of Mid-Atlantic access area trips that could be taken, again, during the summer and fall. If you remember, in 2010, each vessel will have 3 access area trips. So this alternative looked at basically restricting the number of trips that each vessel could take during that turtle season. The third alternative is a seasonal closure of the Delmarva access area itself. And if you recall, the Elephant Trunk access area already has a 2-month seasonal closure for turtles in September and October. That's something we implemented in earlier frameworks. So that has been in place already to protect turtles. And this alternative mirrors that, and it would be either during the months of September and October or just October. The fourth alternative developed by the PDT is to reduce the possession limit of Mid-Atlantic access area trips, basically just as an effort to shorten the amount of time vessels would be fishing for scallops in the Mid-Atlantic. And those are the 4 that we generally looked at, and that all the analysis is included in the document. At the last committee meeting in November, there was interest in possibly combining some of these measures or thinking about them in different ways. So there is an additional document I was explaining before, document number 10, that does that. That document was done after the last committee meeting. It was requested to be done by staff. It is not a PDT document. It is a staff-generated document only, and I'll go through it later in the presentation when we get to these decisions. The last objective of this framework, as I mentioned before, is just minor adjustments to the observer program. There are two pretty minor adjustments that we're considering in the framework. One would be basically a provision to discourage vessel owners from not paying for observers and basically adding teeth to already existing provisions that allow NIMS to kind of look at some permit issues. This would actually not allow a vessel to be issued a permit the following year if it had outstanding observer bills. The second one would be to limit the amount of observer compensation that a general category vessel could get per observed access area trip. This was an issue we've seen the last few years. Some describe it as a loophole that the general category vessels have been basically playing with the clock a little bit because you get a full day's compensation for any amount of the day that you have an observer. So if you go in 1 minute after midnight, you get a whole nother day's compensation. So this would limit the amount. This alternative would limit the amount that an individual vessel could be compensated on a general category trip. And there are two different alternatives under consideration. So those are all the measures. I think it boils down to 4 major decisions before you related to this framework, and some of them are related. basically, to close or not to close a channel, it's a major decision the council should try to wrestle with first. Then, do you go with the lower or the higher F rates that have been analyzed? The next thing would be to determine which is the most appropriate measure for the RPM in terms of what you believe complies with the ESA and what should be considered in this one-year framework. And lastly, kind of not to forget that a lot of these decisions about which scenario to move forward with has impacts on the yellowtail allocation decision you have to make later today. So the major decisions 1, 2, and 4 are pretty related, and hopefully if you can get through that first, we'll have a good sense of where this framework is going, and then we can look at some of the turtle measures and analyses. So as Sally mentioned before, our plan would be for me to present summarize some of the analysis related to each of these major decisions, take a break, have a council motion related to that, and then move on to the next one. So that was the plan. And if we do this right, it could be 4 or 5 motions, and we'll be through the framework. I could just start with the first topic, if that sounds like a good plan. Okay. Oh, sorry, there are a few minor decisions we have to make after. But again, quick motions, hopefully not a big deal. The leasing provision that I mentioned before, whether or not to allow general category vessels to have partial leasing, and then whether you want to include any of those measures related to the observer program. And there are 2 or 3 committee motions that were made in November that are not completely related to this framework, but you may want to consider taking some kind of action on them, and we'll get to each of those after we get through the major decisions. So, starting with the first one, to close or not close portion of the Great South Channel. I just have two or three slides on a summary of impacts. Again, these have all been boiled down to document 7B is a document with a summary of the different analyses estimated for these different scenarios. In general, the closure has 2 immediate effects. It reduces F right away by taking that portion of the ocean away from the fishery. And as a result, it forces effort somewhere else. And when you take a big portion of F that normally would have provided a bunch of effort and yield to the fishery, away from the fishery, as a result, to keep your fishing target maintained, you have to allocate more days at sea to compensate for that closure. So that's why you see with the alternatives that close the channel, you have higher day at sea allocations. And now the fishery is in the position of having to use those days at sea in a smaller area because you're taking away a portion that used to be open access, an open area, and now you're closing it. So the fleet is basically squeezed in a smaller portion of open areas to use more days at sea. And when you combine those things, you end up reducing your LPUE for several years, and your area swept gets higher for the first 2 years. These are not usually desirable things. Luckily, they are temporary while the area is closed, and then when the area reopens, those things react, and you start getting reduced area swept and higher LPUEs. This is all described, I should point out, in Section 5.1, which starts on page 114. Hopefully, you know, you've seen that and gotten a little more familiar with it. We do a lot of projections using a spatial model to estimate, you know, changes in catch and biomass and area swept and so forth by area, and all of that is described starting on page 114. At the committee meeting, there was a great desire to look at these things more than just in the first few years or looking over the span of 10 or 12 years, to look at things in sort of a more 6-year time period. The 3 years the area would be closed in the channel, and the 3 years it would reopen right after that. So since the committee meeting, the document has been revised to focus on basically the impacts, the cumulative impacts from 2010 to 2016, which would basically be about the life of closing the area and then reopening it. So as I said, there's a bunch of tables starting on page 120 or so that show you this cumulative longer-term impact. I'll just summarize them in a few bullets. Basically, exploitable biomass is similar for all four scenarios when you combine the 6 years together. It is slightly higher for the alternative that closes the channel and has a lower F of 0.18. That one does have slightly higher long-term exploitable biomass projections. That scenario also has higher landings projected for that same six-year period. It's roughly 5 to 10 million pounds more than the other alternatives. Depending where you sit, that's a little, that's not a little. That's either a little or a lot. So that's kind of in a nutshell the difference that you get out of, you know, from the 6 years by closing the area or leaving it open. The scenario with the lowest projected exploitable biomass over that time period and about 5 million pounds less landings would be not closing the channel and the higher F scenario. As I mentioned before, overall LPUE is higher and area swept is lower for the scenarios that do not close the channel. And I already explained that one. But that's when you, even when you reopen the channel and you get that benefit and those things respond a little bit, cumulatively over the 6 years, I think the committee was hoping to see, at least over the 6 years, that the closure alternatives would kind of catch up after the 3 years that had been closed. But when you add the 6 years together, they don't quite catch up. They are still a little bit behind in terms of area swept and LPUE. Okay, the CLF-18, again, the one that has the highest catch over the six-year period, is estimated to increase scallop revenues by about $28 million over the course of those same years. That has the total economic benefits of about $22 million for that same time period when you compare this scenario to our status quo, which is basically not closing the channel at the lower F amount. A few more impacts. This closure could shift effort to open areas in the Mid-Atlantic. That's what the model is projecting. You see increased days at sea usage and so forth in the Mid-Atlantic, areas around Long Island and further south. And this could have potential impacts on non-target species and potentially turtles if that open area effort happens to occur during the summer and fall when turtles are more likely to be in that area. Just want to quickly put up a table to remind you that your decision about the scenario for Framework 21 does have impacts on your yellowtail allocation decision later today. For 2010, more Georges Bank yellowtail and southern New England yellowtail would be needed for the alternative that closes the channel. So the column all the way to the right with the closing the channel with the lower F does require the most amount of yellowtail, as I said, because you are projecting some effort shifts down to the Mid-Atlantic, and particularly in southern New England, you'll see that get up to about 36% of the total yellowtail ABC for southern New England would be needed by the scallop fishery. I'm not going to go into this in any more detail now because we have a much longer presentation from Tom explaining the different impacts on revenue and so forth, but I just wanted to remind you that they do require different amounts of yellowtail. That's what they are on the board. And the next one that requires the next amount of yellowtail would be not closing the channel with the higher F of 0.24. The reason that the closure alternative at the higher F of 2.0 is not in this table is the committee recommended not considering that any further for a variety of reasons. So kind of the focus now is on these three, if that helps you at least eliminate something on your paper. Okay, social impacts. Again, would include less flexibility for businesses stemming from possible short-term decreases in revenue in the years when the channel is first closed, which would especially affect businesses with smaller cash flow, less access to other economic and social resources. Social impacts would predominantly be felt in the northern fleet, particularly for small boat businesses due to their decreased flexibility to possibly start fishing in the Mid-Atlantic, for example, if the channel were closed. So, it's really quickly just a few slides about the general impacts. Hopefully you've had a chance to further digest a lot of the tables and figures that are within the analysis document. Here's some input from the advisors and committee. The AP met in September and made a motion to not support any of the scenarios that include a new closure. I just want to note that this meeting and this motion occurred before any actual analyses were before them. So this was kind of more based on just a discussion and concerns they have about basically adding another additional closure in that region before we have a lot of the yellowtail and EFH issues ironed out, as well as a lot of concerns about pushing effort down to the mid-Atlantic. So that's your input from the advisors. The committee, from their meeting in November, did pass a motion, as I mentioned. They did not identify a preferred alternative. Instead, they identified one to basically take off the list. So somewhat helpful. Didn't get you all the way. But they do recommend not even further considering the closure alternative with an F of 0.20, the higher one. Main rationale, over the next few years, it has higher impacts on F. It has negative impacts economically. It requires even more yellowtail allocation than in those other tables. So for those reasons, the committee just felt it should come off the list. But there is no preferred alternative from the committee, so that's basically as far as they got. So I'll pause now. Your first major decision would be to close or not to close a channel, go with the higher or lower F, keeping in mind the yellowtail allocation implications. And hopefully we can pause and get a motion on this stuff, and then we can move into turtles.
Thanks, Deirdre. As Deirdre just explained, there are two really intertwined decisions that need to be made. The committee made one recommendation to eliminate one of the scenarios, the scenario that would close a portion of the Great South Channel while adopting an F of 0.2. That was the one recommendation from the committee. The advisory panel did not recommend closing the Great South Channel, either of those scenarios. I do not have a committee motion selecting one of the four alternatives that are before us, so I'm going to go ahead and make a motion myself, which would require a second. And that would be to adopt scenario one, status quo, for fishing year 2010, which is no closure in the channel and an overall F of 0.2.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rip Cunningham.
Thank you. Deirdre has explained quite a bit about the variation between the four scenarios. And there was a lot of discussion about the potential for the Great South Channel to be added to the rotational management scheme. As you saw from the pictures this year, and if you might recall last year, that seemed like an ideal location for an addition to the rotational management system. However, there was little appetite for adding a new closure. The analysis that we saw that Devorah Hart provided and that's included starting on page 114 of the framework document describes some of the problems associated with the adding the closure, which is why I put this up here to not add that new closure in the Great South Channel. Principally, the shift in effort in order to keep an F rate would be such that the landings, the area swept, would be significantly increased during the first 3 years when the area would be closed, thus kind of negating the potential for the increase in landings per unit effort that would be gained once that area was closed or was reopened again down the road. The F target that the council has adopted in recent years has been 0.20. As Deirdre mentioned, it's been exceeded in recent years in 08 and 09. So this status quo alternative keeps us still in line with that target that we have had in recent years, rather than adopting a higher target. And I guess I will leave it at that. It's tough to put this up there when we're seeing that it's so, there are compelling reasons for a closure in the Great South Channel. We have the Habitat Committee chair on the Scallop Committee and had some discussions about what's been going on in that arena to address the habitat area of particular concern that's been designated in the Great South Channel. And I would expect that he might have some comments on the value of including or not including the Great South Channel in the rotational management scheme, which obviously this motion that I've put up would not. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
And Dr. Jim?
thank you. I just have a question, a clarification. In the discussion of the F rates, there's the F 0.20, 0.24, and 0.18. And having not attended the committee meetings, I don't understand what those Fs represent. Are those annual rates for the coming year, or are they averaged over the six-year window that you're talking about? And also, does that apply stock-wide, or is that somehow related to the closed area and then reopening?
I'll just respond. It's the 1 year for just fishing year 2010, and it is spatially for the entire stock. We are working under the current overfishing definition, which would continue to do that spatially over all the areas. Just to remind you, in Amendment 15, we are considering doing it a little differently in terms of identifying that target F, but we can't do that yet until Amendment 15 is fully decided if we do change the overfishing definition. But this is pre-Amendment 15, so this is the way we have been doing it stockwide.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were two reasons generally given for the access area closure. One was that there was an expected 80% increase in scallop biomass because of the high number of juveniles found in that area. And the other one was for habitat reasons, which I found curious. But on balance, and looking at all of the reasons, with the closure, we'd need a higher limit of yellowtail flounder allocated to that area, which would take them away from the groundfish fishery. And as far as the habitat issue is concerned, that was more than offset. I don't know. First of all, it's the wrong way to do things. If you're going to have a habitat closure, then have it through the Habitat Committee for habitat reasons. And there really weren't any. And any that exist, and none that we could identify, any that would exist would be offset by the higher swept area through the lower operating inefficiency that would result if we did close it. So I saw no particular benefit in that for habitat, and I saw a situation where we had a higher swept area overall and a reduction in operating efficiency for the scallop industry. And I support this motion because scenario one, I have no dog in the fight whether it's scenario one or two, but scenario one is working right now and results in overall higher landings for the industry in a 2010 to 2016 time frame. So I don't see a downside here. I support this motion. I think it's the way to go. Thank you.
Dr. Pearson.
Well, first of all, very comprehensive analyses, a lot of ifs and thens, certainly not an easy decision to make, and I say it's not an easy decision to make for me because I find myself in a bit of a quandary. Rotational fisheries management the cornerstone of scallop fisheries management was implemented years ago in order for us to protect the smaller scallops, the seabeds, you know, that great recruitment that comes along with an expectation that the industry will reap great benefits from that resource once they're larger. And indeed, that has happened through the strategies we've been working with for a few years. I noticed in one of the slides provided by Deidre that there appear to be some very significant longer-term impacts, specifically economic benefit with the closed area, CLF 18, you know, estimated to increase scallop revenues by $28.4 million, total economic benefits by $22 million, as compared to the no closure and F of 0.2, which is the motion, I believe. So there definitely seem to be some very significant benefits to closing the area, which would be consistent with the rotational management area strategies that we've been working with. The motion has been made, I think, primarily because if we close the area, there'll be too much habitat impact, meaning the fishery will have to operate outside the closed areas, more time on the bottom, more towing time, therefore more impact on the bottom, more habitat impacts. Plus, as indicated in the presentation, more yellowtail would be needed because they'll be fishing in other areas for a longer period of time. Catch of yellowtail would go up. Therefore, they need a greater share of the yellowtail TAC, and that's shown in one of the presentations as well, one of the slides. So too much habitat impact, too much yellowtail flounder needed. In addition, too much impact on turtles because effort would shift elsewhere to the mid-Atlantic area specifically. So now I'm left wondering, if we adopt this motion, basically are we saying to ourselves and to all those concerned about the scallop resource and scallop management, rotational management, that it's highly unlikely that we will ever close any areas where there are sets of small scallops, because by doing so, we'll have these impacts. Too much yellowtail, too much habitat impact, too much impact on turtles. That's my problem right now with this particular motion. I'm trying to understand the implications of this motion and the rationale for it, implications for rotational management and protection of beds of small scallops. It's beyond me right now. I clearly understand the impact on the fishing industry by going to the closed area. But I note in slide 16 given by Deidre that some of the impacts are specific social impacts, including less flexibility for businesses stemming from possible short-term decreases in revenue, et cetera, et cetera. But I've always understood that with rotational fisheries management, with closures of areas to protect the seed scallops, this would happen, that we would have these kinds of impacts. They're unavoidable for a long-term gain. So, again, is this motion indicative of an attempt by a suggestion by the committee and by the industry advisors that we should maximize short-term gain and set aside any long-term gain that we would acquire? I need to be helped out by the committee and by anybody else to help me set aside my concerns that we are undercutting rotational fisheries management by our not taking advantage of this large area with small sets, with small scallops, that apparently will result in some very significant long-term yield. Yes, there'll be short-term economic impacts, and I don't minimize that, but that's the consequence of rotational fisheries management. So that's my list of concerns and why I'm having trouble understanding, why I'm having trouble at this point supporting the motion.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had my hand up for to ask a question, but just to speak to some of Dr. Pierce's concerns, I think that the industry in general, what I've heard from them is that the Great South Channel is a very unique place. They do believe that there are some small scallops there, but because the area is so dynamic in the tides and things like that, they think it's very likely that you could go back in a couple of years and those small scallops would not be there, that they wouldn't grow out and stay, you know, in the area, that they actually would move on. So I think, you know, as far as looking at the Great South Channel, it's different from the other closures and the rotational areas that are in the fishery. But for Deirdre, I just had a question. When you recalculated the F rate for this past year, did it come in at 0.30? I mean, it was higher than anticipated. I was just curious what that number was.
Yeah, I was hesitant to put the numbers in the slide because they're preliminary and are not final until the assessment this summer. But the preliminary work that was presented to the committee in November was that for 2008, it came in at 0.29, which is the threshold. And in 2009, it's looking like 0.30, you're correct, which is just over the threshold. Again, particularly with the second year, that information, the fishing year is not even over, so it's very preliminary. And it will be completely reviewed this summer at the SARC.
And just another question to follow up. The SSC, they endorse the 0.24 approach?
Well, this is where the timing is very awkward. The SSC, if you remember, is in Amendment 15, is much more related with setting that ABC. They did not really endorse one way or the other what the council should do in terms of a target. If you recall, they had lots of discussions about it, but the SSC recommendation is not related to the target, which is either the 0.20 or the 0.24. Their recommendations were strictly about the ABC.
Okay, and then just one last question. You did say that we needed to have a 20% reduction. And when you say we need a 20% reduction, what's the goal that you're trying to achieve there in relationship to the F rate?
Bringing down our higher F from 08 and 09 at the 0.29 and the 0.30 back down 20% to bring us closer to a more comfortable target where we won't have that similar risk of exceeding the threshold.
Okay, and so all of these alternatives meet that goal of the reduction of 20%?
I have to think about that specifically, but they are definitely all reductions compared to where we were this year, yes.
Okay, well
they obviously have different percentages in how much they reduce it, though. I have to think a little bit about exactly where they fall around the 20%. They're not all equal to 20%, though. Some higher and lower, probably.
But all probably within a
all
range
definitely
that's
less.
Acceptable. Well, I certainly do agree with a lot of the comments that people have made about whether or not we should move in the direction of a closure or not. I think there's plenty of rationale for not closing the Great South Channel. However, I would make a motion to amend the motion that's on the table. To have the no closure, but an F rate of 0.24. I think we have one less access area trip. It is a reduction from recent effort in the fishery. We have a growing biomass, and I think it's certainly justified for the coming year.
Is there a second on the motion to amend? Rodney. Discussion on the motion to amend. Rodney.
I just have one other point to Dr. Pierce's point about he was worried about habitat and the fish. Another thing we have to worry about is that if we close the Great South Channel, a lot of that effort is going to move south of New England, where we have winter flounder. We have a big problem with winter flounder. I'm talking about Nomans to Block Island. That would redirect some of that effort there. Another thing is, I remember years ago, that's one good thing about being old and having a good memory, that the Great South Channel was loaded with seed, and all that seed just disappeared. Mary Beth made that point. Another thing, we're fishing with larger rings, the vessels are fishing with larger rings, larger twine top, that allows more escapement of the seed. With the currents in the channel, that seed is going to find its way down to other places. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Pierce, you've stimulated some conversation with your comments. Sally McGee.
Yeah, I mean, this is to the motion, but to the underlying motion as well, just in considering some of the questions that have been raised. The committee talked about the range of alternatives
that were considered and asked under what scenario would the balance in terms of area swept or landings per unit effort shift to the positive, to what you would expect by including an area as productive as the Great South Channel in the rotational management scheme. Where, you know, what do you need to do to make that shift happen? And Dr. Hart mentioned that if the analysis had used for the a closed area scenario had used a lower target F, obviously the shift in effort would have been would not have been as extreme, and so that wasn't done. We don't have another the benefit of a closed area scenario with a target F of 0.16 to compare and see how it would compare in terms of area swept, landings per unit effort, and revenue. The foregone revenue, I'm not sure exactly what to say about that, other than the advisory panel did not seem to want to make that trade-off in terms of endorsing consideration of the Great South Channel. And I think combined with the change in assumptions that Deirdre talked about at the beginning, changing the catch per unit effort, which is they're assuming now is higher than what they had been assuming before, resulting in a decrease in days at sea allocation, plus having a better understanding about how many active limited access vessels there are. There are, a dozen plus more than expected. That has also decreased the days at sea. So I think the calculation on top of that, with adding a new area in the short term for the next 3 years, made it less appealing for at least the advisory panel and then the committee to consider the Great South Channel for inclusion in the rotational management scheme. I don't think that is an indication of the throwing in the towel and adding any new areas, but rather all of these changes happening at the same time, perhaps in total, made it less appealing. As far as the motion here, I would suggest that given the where we've been in terms of the F threshold in the recent couple of years, that it's time to be careful with this robust fishery, and therefore I would not support the motion to amend. Thank you.
Paul.
When you look at these four different scenarios, I don't think any of us want. I think the stock assessment is in next year for scallops.
June.
This June of 2010. I don't think any of us want to see our most valuable fishery listed as overfishing when the number one goal of the council is to prevent or end overfishing. And you know, we've been told for the last 5 years, we've been given reports of how we're doing at the national level, and I would just hate to see scallops listed as overfishing in this next assessment. And the preliminary work you've done says we're above the overfishing threshold, could be. So are any of these four, all four of these meet the goal of reducing F by 20%? Are there some that are riskier than others for meeting that goal? Or are they equal?
No, they're not equal. They have different Fs, but they are all precautionary enough. The hope is that our target is a better target now than it used to be, because we have made modifications to the assumptions about catch per day and how many vessels are actually fishing and so forth. So the PDT does believe that our projections are better than they were in the last framework. Certainly the ones with the higher F have higher risk, but all of them have been designed to not exceed the threshold. If I can, could I just add on to Dr. Pierce? I think raised a really good point, and of course it would worry anyone on the PDT about things or having the impression that area rotation, we won't be able to overcome these short-term costs for long-term gains. Of course, that is the goal of area rotation. And Sally touched on this also. The reason that the comparing these scenarios over 6 years is not giving you better area swept long-term figures and higher catch rates with the closure scenarios is not because we're closing the area. It's because we're trapped that we have a fishery-wide F target. That's for all areas. And we're basically giving days at sea. There's more days at sea. That's what's driving the reason that you're not seeing that quick turnaround in area swept and catch per day is because we're still allocating a high number of days at sea. So it's not really because of the closure. It's because of the higher days at sea values. And this is going to continue and has been a problem under our current overfishing definition because we have, and this came up at the meeting, and maybe it's finally kind of settling in for everyone, because we have a fishery-wide F target that includes closed areas that are completely closed to the fishery, that have no Fs, we have these high Fs in the open areas. Until we change how that's set up, this spatial problem with this fishery will continue to happen, and that's how we have to compensate for that fishery-wide target. In Amendment 15, we're considering a target that is not fishery-wide and it's area-specific, so hopefully in the future, with future access area programs and so forth, we won't have that problem as much as you're seeing it in these results today.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, to the motion. I understand the reasons why Mary Beth made the motion. She did a good job explaining a rationale. I suspect I'll vote against it largely because of the fact that if we do go to that particular option, according to the presentation given by Deidre on page 8, slide 16, we would have to increase the amount of yellowtail flounder allocated to the sea scallop fleet by about 5%. It's already at a rather high point with the original motion, about 22.5%. The overall yellowtail flounder TAC would have to be allocated. So that's the factor that is leading me to oppose the motion.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Several points and. One is in response to Dr. Pierce's original concern, and obviously rotational management has really been a cornerstone in the success of this FMP. And I think when the technical indicator suggests that we should close an area, we have to look at that very, very carefully. And if we're not going to follow through with the closure, it has to be for good reason. And in this case, the committee did wrestle with the question, and so the benefits ultimately associated with the closure were very marginal. If you look at the differences in yield on page 122 of the document, which is table 38, I think that really sets the stage for perhaps the consideration of both of these motions, but also the issue more generally. And so with the closure scenarios, there was a very marginal increase in cumulative yield over that time period. And the area swept went through the roof for some of the options. And so that was a significant concern because here we are at the same time trying to address yellowtail interactions as well as consider protected resources issues. And with one of these options, we'd be allocating up to 51 open area DAS. And a lot of that effort would occur in the mid-Atlantic, potentially where recruitment has been relatively low for the past few years. So there was concern about open area overfishing associated with some of the options. But when I look through the landings projections that we now have updated for the seven-year period in Table 38, I think it's worth noting that as you consider these two options, that is no closure in F-20 versus no closure in F-24, there's a real trade-off there between short and long-term impacts. And frankly, the cumulative impacts across that seven-year period, the difference is only about 1%. You're looking at 430 million pounds versus 426 million pounds. So there's a very negligible difference in the cumulative gains, and yet the short-term impacts, at least in the 2010 fishing year, are on the order of about 15%. So there is a significant trade-off there, I think, between the short and long-term benefits. The committee did not arrive at a preferred alternative, and I think that reflected the fact that the PDT had also wrestled with this question. It did not bring a consensus recommendation to the table. You know, there were a lot of different opinions, I think, that came out of that. But I was just going to suggest before that second motion was made that it might be worth the council debating splitting the difference in fishing at 34 open area DAS in 2010 to try to strike a balance perhaps between those short and long-term benefits. If you look, again, looking at Table 38 and the projections of yields over those 7 years, again, in 2010, if you fish at NC20 or NC24, you've got about a 15% difference in the yield in the fishery versus only a 1% difference over that entire seven-year period. So it might be worth considering splitting the difference and not having the closure. I think the closure in this case really kind of did not perform very well, frankly, because of the dramatic increase in open area or in open area DAS allocations and also in the area swept. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Deidre, what is our target F? Is it 0.2 or 0.24? I can't find it in the document.
It's not set that way. In the last framework, we set it at 0.20, and that was more precautionary than we have done in the past because of all the reasons where we were 3 years ago, and that was the decision that was made. That's why the PDT did 0.20 again to follow that rationale. The reason we did 0.24, if I didn't mention it yet, is all of the work that we've been doing over the last year with the SSC, our uncertainty work has become much more sophisticated, and after Amendment 15 and after the assessment this summer, we probably likely will be able to support a target of 0.24, but when you do that, the threshold is also going to go higher, so you're not going to just, you know, reduce your buffer. But it's awkward to do that before the assessment has the ability to kind of really look through all these issues this summer. But they are going to do that and potentially recommend that the overfishing threshold be much greater than 0.29. So we looked at it. It's a little, you know, ahead of ourselves, if you will, a little bit. But because we went through all the work in Amendment 15 and the SSC did see it all and, you know, basically blessed it all, we felt comfortable that we could include it as a target alternative in this framework. But again, it's not a set target. The council has the, flexibility with each framework to identify where you want to set that target. Now, since the Magnuson Act, of course, you can't do it higher than the ABC. But other than that, we've been generally doing about 80% of the overfishing definition in the past.
So we aim for 0.2, and we got 0.29 to 0.3, but our method of estimating where we want to be is better now, so hopefully when we aim for 0.2, we're going to come out at 0.2, but we might come out at 0.25 or 0.28. We still don't know. So if we aim at 0.24 right now, we could come out at 0.32, and if we do, we're overfished. So I can't support that. Second of all, I call you, you know, like Rick did, I went and looked at the estimated landings, and you forego 5 million pounds next year at 0.2, and you pick up over the next 6 years 10 million pounds. So you do better in the long term by fishing at F.2 next year, quite a bit better. And you also don't risk overfishing, because if you end up in an overfishing condition, then you've got to do a rebuilding plan. So you can throw all these numbers out the window, and then they're going to be a lot smaller. That's one point. So I don't support the motion to amend. The second point is to Dr. Pierce's discussion of the closed area. I think putting this rotational area in is a good idea, but it's the wrong time and the wrong – it's just the wrong time. if 4 or 5 years down the road, once we've got a way to trade yellowtail, once we've got the effort moving someplace where we don't have interactions with turtles, in other words, we say we're moving the effort to Georges instead of to the Mid-Atlantic, that would be the right time to do it. You know, we don't want to create three problems trying to solve one. And so that's why I wouldn't support the closure at this time, but I might support it in the future. I don't think it's a rejection of closing areas for small scallops. I think it's a weighing all the negatives and the positives and saying there's just too many negatives for the positive in this case.
Paul Hart.
Just, Dave, just your terminology was a little backwards. Overfishing would occur. Overfished means below a half.
Right.
And okay, so you said we'd be. Yeah, but you said we'd be overfished, but that's. Yeah.
Chris Kellogg.
Another thing you might consider, which I don't think the council has done a very good job of over the past decade or so, is paying attention to the economic analysis. Now, I think for scallops now, we have some very good economic analysis that you can now put some faith in. And if you look just quickly at figure 27 of the graphs of LPUE, figure 37 on page 127, or at the net economic analysis on another page that is?
The economic analysis, while he's looking, is in document 1A, separate from the other document. It's probably table 2.
Yeah, table
page
2.
Page 4.
You'll find that under the lower F scenario, you'll actually get better economic benefits, and that's because catch rates are higher. So I think you're not really going to lose much economically by going at the lower F scenario. At least that's what our PDT analysis shows. And we've had very good results from the price projection models. We have reasonable cost information. And I think that's what's helped drive the success of the fishery and also the rotational area management strategy.
Yeah, it's really the first year. I mean, the first year is when this would be felt. The economic and yield projections bump really pretty similar right after that.
And the future year benefits are discounted. So when you're really looking at from an economic viewpoint, even though you have some first year costs and impacts, those are more than compensated by future revenues, which are properly discounted. So.
Anyone else on the council? Mary Beth.
Yeah, people have expressed some concerns about the 0.24, and I think that one thing we're forgetting is that all of these alternatives are a reduction from current effort. And David's concerns about our ability to calculate effort and what that's going to result in the long term, when we look back at the fishing year, I think that the PDT has done a lot of work at refining their estimates of the capacity and the effort in the fishery, and realizing that it didn't calculate out well the last time around, they've addressed that. I think Rick also brought up some very good points in discussion from the committee, and I think he also offered perhaps what is a more palatable alternative, which would be to split the difference. So it is my motion to amend at 0.24. I don't know if it would simply be a perfection of the current amendment to the motion to change it to 0.22, or if we're getting a little too convoluted, and I'd look to the chairman on that.
Is there objection to the maker and seconder perfecting their motion after debate? Any objection? Objection. Okay. So we'll need a motion to amend. And then we're done. We're not going any layers deeper than that.
Okay, so I'll do that. Then I make a motion to amend my motion to amend to adopt the no closure with an F rate of 0.22.
There's a second. Seconded by Rodney. Discussion on the motion to amend, Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just relative to this, I had one follow-up question for Deirdre. And Deirdre, I know you said that the new LPUE that goes into the DAS calculations has been amended. How much more conservative is that than what we used in the past?
It's in the order of closer to 1,800 pounds per day now. I'd have to go back and check, but it's definitely a few hundred pounds higher than it used to be. And those additional 15 vessels that we now consider 340 full-time vessels when we come up with these numbers also makes a pretty big difference in those things. I had a question about this motion, too. Take it now or later. I was just curious, if this does pass, what has to be done to the document? We clearly have fully analyzed something a little bit higher than it and something a little bit lower than it. If we have to run an exact scenario of this, it takes several days to do the biological projection, but then we also have to do all of the turtle work at this scenario level, all of the yellowtail work at this exact scenario level. Of course, the projections will all be somewhere right in the middle between these two, but I would like to get a little bit of feedback about that, because that is a problem if we have to do it exactly at this level, because we're expected to submit this document December 1st.
I actually had a question. Since I'm taking over, I'll ask it right now. But do you think that this would, this sort of change in the analysis that you need to do would prevent you from submitting it on the 1st?
Well, I think if I have to do what I just described, yes, most definitely. If because we've analyzed higher than it and lower than it, and this is within that range, I've also heard that's okay with NEPA and it's within the range, but I definitely would like that clarified today because it will make a difference. This is a problem that we're submitting this document late to start with, and if we can't do it as fast as we can, that's just a further problem. It might not be implemented before June 15th, which causes huge problems for the fishery.
I get to be bad cop. Flip the coin there. Yes, it has to be reanalyzed. It's okay to choose different alternatives within the range, but once you choose that alternative, it does need to be fully analyzed in the document before it's submitted.
Yeah, I objected to this being made as a perfection because I just don't know what the impact is going to be in terms of sea turtles, in terms of demand for yellowtail. If we had the numbers in front of us, then we could make a decision. But, we can make an educated guess here, but I don't think that's a good thing to do, especially in light of the impacts on groundfish and turtles that are the some key decisions that have to be made in this document. So for those reasons, aside from needing to be compliant with NEPA once the thing is actually submitted, if we don't have those numbers in front of us today to make the decision, then it's not something that I think we should be selecting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a follow-up to my question to Dee, I have some strong concerns that this will slow up a process that has been on a very tight time schedule to begin with, and that I'm not sure that I can support something that is going to have the potential to put us behind that time schedule.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. On the motion to amend the amendment, group. Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. First, I'd like to just talk to the issue of the closure versus the no closure, and then we can talk about the efforts. But on the issue of closure and no closure, I mean, one thing that has to be reminded is that scallop recruitment, they're closing areas with high recruitment is one of the strategies we have within the our fishery management plan to address that. The other major one is the 4-inch ring, which lets most of the young scallops through. And, you know, this area of high recruitment in the Great South Channel has happened with a lot of fishing effort in there because of the 4-inch ring. I would also note that unlike other access areas, the Great South Channel, with its currents that it has, a large portion of the fleet would not be able to actually prosecute that access area trip in the area once it was reopened because they don't have the horsepower to fish in that area. As many of you know, Great South Channel is a difficult area to fish, and you need a certain amount of horsepower to be able to pull that off. And especially some boats to the southern just wouldn't be able to do that. And then you add onto it, you know, as it's often discussion of scallops, we don't talk much about the scallops, but we talk about all the other factors. And the fact is, between habitat, turtles, and bycatch, specifically of yellowtail, those are all things that we have to consider when we're making decisions, and the closure option is negative on all three of those. So when you take that into account, it's very hard for us to justify or support this particular closure. That being said, we are very supportive of rotational management, and we would like to see Georgia, you know, there are three actual rotational areas in the Mid-Atlantic, and we have sort of a hodgepodge on the Georgia's Bank with the access areas being built into pre-existing groundfish closures. What we hope is the outcome of your habitat process is that we actually move to a proper rotational management schedule and regime on Georgia's Bank. So that's where we want to see this go. For the F rates, Fishery Survival Fund supports the 0.24, understanding also why the 0.22 was put up there, and also understanding some of the difficulties, although it's really splitting the difference. So I think you have a pretty good idea of while the specific number may not be in front of you, it's pretty easy to figure out, sort of split the difference on all these things you're looking at. With 0.22, you know, either it's 29 or 38 days, so you're looking at 33.5 or 34, round up to 34 days at sea, and then a projected catch of around, 47 to 41, so around 44 million pounds projected catch. Just want to tell you, the status quo this year, we had 5 access area trips and 37 days at sea, which was actually 42 days at sea if you're to compare apples to apples, because we had to remove those 5 or 6 days at sea this year because Amendment 11 didn't implement the IFQ, so the interim 10% allocation of the general category was in place. This assumes that Amendment 11 will be implemented with the 5% allocation to the general category. So the actual days at sea under that scenario for this year would have been 42 rather than the 37 that we're fishing under this year. So what is being proposed is we're only 4 access area trips, so that's a decrease of 1 access area trip, which is 18,000 pounds per permit, which is significant. And then it's also an overall decrease from 42 days at sea to 38. This is a stock that is growing. It is still growing. You know, we are at over 150% of BMSOI, so I note that there is concerns about the overfishing level, but overfished is nowhere anywhere in what we're talking about. You know, we're at 150% of BMSOI, and to be overfished, we'd have to be below 50% of BMSOI. So we're not even close to that. And you know, you have an SSC recommendation or endorsed an ABC of 65 million pounds in this fishery. So F.24 at a projected catch of 47 million pounds is a 25% reduction from the ABC. Not the OFL, but the ABC. Now, remember, the ABC in this fishery is a good 25% off of the OFL. So we're at 0.24. We are nowhere near actually overfishing the stock as far as the poundage is concerned. And I understand we're in a bit of a transition period right now where we're moving into the ACL-AM regime, and we have the SSC endorse the approach of the PDT put forward as far as setting the ACL and the AM. But it should be noted that what the SSC has endorsed is you're looking at an OFL of about 0.37. Is that correct, Deirdre? Yeah, so 0.37, an ABC of around 0.29, 0.3, and then an ACT. If you were to back off of that, Because what Dr. Hart did was a Monte Carlo simulation where she looked at the probabilities of exceeding these targets. And the 0.29 represents a 25% chance of overfishing, and then an ACT of 0.24 represents a 25% chance of exceeding the ABC. When you add those two reductions together, you have a minuscule percentage of actually exceeding your overfishing limit. So at 0.24, we are in a very conservative, very safe territory, and we are not drastically reducing the effort from 2009 to 2010 as you would with 0.2. I mean, going down to 28 or 29 days at sea and one less excess area trip is a significant reduction, especially when you consider the stock size is still growing and recruitment is still strong, especially on Georges Bank. It's at average or a little bit below average in the Mid-Atlantic, but that's following several years of very high recruitment. You add that with the advances that they have in calculating the LPOE and the calculating the proper number of vessels fishing and the precision we have in the management, I think 0.24 is incredibly justified and represents a good step forward. Thank you.
Ron?
Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I don't want to repeat anything that Drew pointed out, but if there was anything that we had in doubt in the Fishery Survival Fund, the industry, that we would be overfishing, we wouldn't be advocating the 0.24. There's just conservation measure after conservation measure that's been taken into account in the calculations, improvements in the LPUE. There is no risk at 0.24. Even at the 47 million pounds is about 5 or 6 million pounds at a minimum different below what we were landing this year and year before. That particular area in the channel is a seed area. In Amendment 6 in our Seastead proposal, we always knew the whole fundamental basis of our proposal, which is the next step in scallop management, is to take seed from areas where it sets and doesn't grow and move it to areas where it could grow out. And that's what we proposed in Amendment 6. That was the area we identified as a seed area. In 2007, we went through a period of time before 2007 with low recruitment on Georges. In 2007, there was a large seed set in that area. It was proposed to be closed. The industry said it's a seed area. It's always seed there. In 2008, there was another set of seed. Where's that seed? That was in 2007. It's not there in the great numbers. There's a lot of predation in that area. It's a high crab area because ecologically, the crabs know the seed sets there. There's a stationary oceanographic front at that location. In the long term, that might be a seed area where we take our seed out of there and move it to other areas. Hopefully, it's moving out of there naturally into closed area one and into the lightship. The meat counts from the channel this year, I haven't seen any scallops smaller than a 22 count. So I'm pretty confident that we're nowhere near overfishing just by watching what the meat counts are. People have brought up on the council the issue of the analysis out years. You have to remember the assumptions are what the council in that model for the next 6 years assumes what the council is going to do for Framework 22, it assumes what the council is going to do for Framework 23, and we have lots of other factors, the turtles, the habitat, the yellowtail. Our goal over the long term, besides high catch per unit effort, has been stability in the fishery, which means the idea of cutting the catch low this year and then having it higher next year is not as desirable as trying to keep those fluctuations out of the process. So we're shooting for stability in landings. We could have it without, because we're operating so far below the risk level, and I think we have to keep that in mind. And so I wouldn't depend too much on these out-year analyses. The only other thing I want to mention is I'm a little bit concerned that the discussion that we're going to reduce the the target catch of scallops because of concerns about yellowtail. We should decide what the optimum level of scallop production is here and then deal with yellowtail issues later. To start at every level to cut scallop production under yellowtail concerns, I just don't think is right. Thank you.
Mr. Hughes?
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for allowing me the opportunity to speak. A couple of things I'd like to point out as a fisherman is that by adopting point two, EFA point two, it's a 21.6 reduction in days at sea from 2009 versus 2010. Couple that with a 10% reduction in due to lack of a fifth access area trip this year, and we're looking at over a 30% reduction in annual revenue. I don't know how, as somebody that owns a company, can accept the fact they're going to take over a 30% hit in their revenue this year. That's like the IRS coming to say that, you know what, to pay for all of our stimulus, we're going to have to tax everybody over 60%. On their annual income. Another thing that I'd like to say is that boats that fishing 29 days at sea with four access trips at an average of 7 days at sea for 21 days at sea for access area trips, that brings up a total of 57 days. That means these boats are going to be tied to the dock for over 300 days a year for 2010. That's what we're looking at. All the boats are going to be tied to the dock for over 300 days. And I don't think there's a That's wrong. I cannot support F.2. I support it as it was amended the first time at F.24. Thank you.
Mr. Kendall.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following those three great sets of comments, it's a little bit tough to follow up on that other than to say I support just about everything you heard on that. Should be no surprise because they're fairly well knowledgeable about this particular fishery and the resource. But there are a couple concerns that were raised that I'd like to comment on and see if I can add a little bit of certainty to some of the questions. Dr. Pierce mentioned about the rotational closures. Problem is if we do adopt a closure in the South Channel, where's the rotation? We're not being off in any rotational area that we can access while we close a new one. And that was part of the precept when we were doing rotational closures early on, is if we closed one area because of an abundance of small scallops, we were hopefully going to find an area that we could prosecute with the larger scallops that we had gained from earlier closures. And I don't see that being off in here. The Great South Channel, at one time, I remember when Mike Pinckney stated that it was one of the most productive areas on Georges or near North Atlantic Ocean, and I agreed with him. And I said it's been that way for over 100 years, and it remains that way. And it's because it's so dynamic there. The currents that run through there are phenomenal. And I think if someone were to take the effort and tag some of these small scallops that are there, you'd probably get to the issue that Ron Smallowitz made, was the fact that those small ones don't seem to remain there. We're not quite sure where they go, but we do believe that that's a seed area and it's just transit scallops. They come back time and time again. You will find large ones there, but not on the order that you would have if you closed, say, the eastern side of Georges. With a large set of small scallops, you go back in a couple of years, you can be fairly certain that the majority of them are going to remain there. That's not the case in the channel. The channel is too dynamic. Just with natural activity there with the currents and so forth, not to speak of the abnormal weather conditions that occur every so often that completely transform that whole bottom. So I hopefully I addressed that particular concern of his. Paul Howard mentioned there about the F and overfishing, but the way I understand it is that it's basically localized overfishing. And by closing an additional area with no additional access, I think you just tend to accentuate that particular point. we need to find a way to balance the resources within the closed areas and the resource that we're currently harvesting in the open areas. If we can convert the overall M that's currently ongoing in some of these closed areas and turn that into a legitimate F where we can harvest the resource rather than watch it die or let it die, then I think we'd be that much further ahead. Oftentimes you hear an issue about fishermen taking small scallop because there is an abundance of them and they just go and do what fishermen do. I believe it was Peter that mentioned about the small scallops and the size of them. What wasn't said is that something has occurred in the last 10 years that didn't exist before. There are now price ranges for various size scallops. So the impetus to go out and harvest small scallops no longer exists like it did, because it's not $4 a pound for scallops. It's not $5 a pound for scallops. It's $10 for U10s. It's $8 for U12s, 10-20s, so forth and so on. So now the financial issue that fishermen supposedly are only concerned with has changed. That whole world has changed. They are going to tend to direct on the larger scallops, as we hope they would, just because of pure finance. So I think that's another issue that oftentimes gets lost. You heard about ring sizes, the dynamic area. And a good point was also made about the difficulty in fishing in the South Channel. You do not have, and I think you can bear this out if you go back and do similar to what Paul Rago did at one time, do the tracking of the activity that's gone on there that can be proofed out by BMS tracks and see how many boats are unable or unwilling to fish those areas. And there have been times, and I can remember several fishermen who went there for the first time and had never fished there before, ran into severe complications, lost dredges. One vessel that I remember lost two dredges, and that was in the softer part down around the BA buoy. It was around the BA buoy. So, all those things have been mentioned. I'm just trying to put a further stamp on them. And the 300 days at sea at the dock, well, you can see that that's a pretty big issue. And I think you'll find a lot of groundfish fishermen who will agree with you that 300 days at the dock is pretty phenomenal. But the issue is here is there's a different situation. If they're tied to the dock for 300 days at sea, it's because of management plans, not because of resource problems. You have the most abundant resource out there, the most profitable resource out there, and the healthiest resource. Somehow, it defies logic why you wouldn't want to harvest that resource. Well, thank you for the time.
Dave, and then I'm coming back to the council.
Thank you, David, for the Fisheries Survival Fund. Just a couple points. I wanted to note that your choices are between 36% below a precautionary ABC at F of 0.2 and 25% below the ABC at an F of 0.24. And the ABC is precautionary to start with. One point of precision on Yellowtail, and I understand Ron's point. It was noted that at the F of 0.24 you'd need 27.3%, another 5% of the yellowtail. The table more fully says Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine, at 0.2 you'd need 3.4%. At 0.24 you'd need 4.5%. George's at 0.2 you'd need 9.2%, which is less than you'd get in an access area trip. There was a discussion at the committee meeting and at the PDT meetings earlier about analyzing a partial trip into closed area too. That wasn't done, from what I can tell. I haven't been here as much as Drew has, but I think a lot of the effort went into trying to come up with incredibly elaborate analysis on turtles. So this half a trip or some part of a trip that would have used even 10% into closed area two, they didn't. The half a trip never materialized in the options. And you're only talking, if you were to go to an F of 0.24, of 12.2% overall. So that's only a 3% swing right at that 10% margin. Again, on Cape Cod and George's, it's 3.4 versus 4.5, that's not even hitting the threshold you need to have a sub-ACL based on how you're doing this. So in Southern New England, Mid-Atlantic, there is a difference, 22.5 versus 27.3. But again, let's please put that in context. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Anything further before we start moving through the amended amendment. Jim Odlin.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm correct. If we vote this down, the next amended motion comes back up, and you vote up or down on that. Just want to be clear. I haven't said anything, so I'm going to vote this down and vote for the next, for the other amendment, only because of Deirdre's comments on we could be in danger of slowing the process down. I don't think we can make this split. And I'm very intrigued by the PDT's comments that they're comfortable 0.24. They feel they have the needed precision now to do this. So that's why I'm going to vote for 0.24.
Anyone else in the council? Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suggest that it was worth discussing this option. I appreciate the council's discussion on it. I also appreciate the concerns that have been raised by your staff and by the service regarding the document development. Thank you.
Okay. Ready for the question? On the motion to amend the amendment, all those in favor, raise your hand. Zero. Opposed? Unanimous. I guess I let that run a bit long. On the motion to amend, Pat Kirkle.
I'd like to go back to the points that Chris Kellogg made on this. I don't support the motion to amend, and it's based on looking at the economic analysis, which is in document 1A. And if you look at, several of the tables, but table 13 on page 15, then although the economics, the total economic benefits are lower in the first year for the status quo alternative, they're higher in most of the other years. And if you look at the summary of the economic benefits, which is the next table, table 15, then the status quo clearly has higher long-term benefits. So given that it provides just a little bit of an extra cushion in terms of our uncertainty with the fishing mortality rate and the fact that it also provides better or higher long-term economic benefits, then I don't support the motion to amend.
Anyone else on the council? On the motion to amend. Jimmy?
Yeah, I guess I got a question of Deirdre. In your economic analysis, I think there's something that you can't measure. And that is, if you take a product off the market for a year, you can't assume you're getting it back the following year, a significant portion of that. You can't assume you're going to get that back at the same value you got into it. And I think that's what you assumed in your economic analysis, that the same product would be worth the same money, or an inflation rate or whatever. But you know what I'm saying? There's a price to pay when you don't have consistent supply of product. I mean, we're suffering with that in groundfish every single day.
Yes, and I'm sure that's why the industry is so supportive of stability, obviously. I'll let Demet respond because she's obviously much more familiar with the assumptions made. I don't know what assumptions are made about market share. I do know that we definitely adjust the prices in the future based on those things. But in terms of how much market share is accounted for, I'll let her answer.
I didn't quite understand your question, but we did the analysis based on inflation-adjusted value. So this inflation is not taken into account. And also the future value of the benefits are lower than the present value of the benefits. In terms of the market share, the prices takes into account the exports, for example, and that is kind of the represents the market share of United States in the whole global market. So in that sense, it takes that into account. When the overall landings are lower under status quo, we have less exports, so that is taken into account as much as possible.
Anyone else on the council? Sally.
Yeah, I still support the underlying motion. The landings are essentially the same for the two options that are on the table right now. The economics are better, even if you look at fewer out years, just 5-6 years out for the F equals 0.2. The yellowtail is better. So in all the things that the council has to consider, the directed scallop fishery, the economics of it, the biology of it, and its impacts on other fisheries, the underlying motion is superior. So I'm going to urge everyone to vote this one down and support the underlying motion.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was persuaded by the industry's comments on the 0.24. I think we're operating this fishery in a very conservative manner. You know, it is a reduction. All of these alternatives are a reduction. And, you know, I support the motion that I made to amend.
Anyone else? On the motion to amend, you ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Seven. Opposed?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
10. Motion to amend fails, 7-10. Back on the main motion. Anything further on the main motion? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 14. Opposed? 2. Abstentions? 1. Motion carries 14-2 with 1 abstention. We'll take a break. Okay. Turn back to Chair of the Scallop Committee, Sally McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item for discussion, I'm going to turn right to Deirdre for decision in Framework 21, is relating to the reasonable and prudent measures put forward in the turtle biological opinion and compliance with those. The committee had discussion about this, and Deirdre is going to need to walk us through some additional alternatives that were brought to the table more recently than the committee discussion. So I'll ask Deirdre to step us through this.
I'm going to flip back to the presentation, starting with slide 19. It's where we left off.
Sorry, Karen.
Thanks. Starting with slide 19, again, this is the third major decision before you having to do with identification of what an appropriate measure would be to comply with the RPM for 2010. Again, Framework 21 includes 4 alternatives. I described them already. Just as a reminder, RPMs and terms and conditions that implement them cannot alter the basic design, location, scope, duration, or timing of an action and may involve only minor changes. This is right from the Endangered Species Act. The involving only minor changes has been the really challenging part for the PDT and the Council. If you remember, starting from last year when the opinion originally came out, actually, what that threshold is, what defines a minor change, is not defined. So we've spent a lot of time working on that. It's been challenging, and we do have a suggestion. It's included in the document. Hopefully you had a chance to review it. The overall discussion of what is more than a minor impact and what would constitute this threshold is described starting on page 147 of the framework document. It's about 40 pages long. People are correct. We spent a lot of time on this, and it's detailed there. And again, hopefully you had a chance to review it. The RPM number 1 from the opinion, basically the requirement before us is to minimize takes, in this case by limiting effort, up to a point that would not have more than a minor impact on the fishery. So again, the last 40 pages of the framework go through what is more than a minor impact, and I'm going to summarize that in the next single slide. So the PDT's original recommendation and the committee's approval and review of that is basically that our threshold for arguing what would constitute more than a minor impact on the fishery should be based on a certain amount of effort shift imposed by that specific measure. So if you have a certain measure that you're considering, it will have a certain amount of effort. It's going to shift from the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season outside of it. Basically, it could remain in the mid-Atlantic, but during the season outside of the turtle window, or it may move to Georges Bank. But that amount of effort, that potential kind of hold you have in, or influence on fishing effort, is what we think is what you should base your decision on, what's more than a minor. This effort shift causes changes on fishing mortality because there are differences in scallop meat weight yield by month throughout the year, so there are different times of year when they're higher and lower. Typically, in the late spring and summer, meat weights are at their best, and that kind of trails off through the end of the year. So if you're talking about shifting a bunch of effort from the time of year when it's higher to months when it's generally lower, you're talking about an increase in F when you do that. You're talking about a change in yield if you're talking about open areas, because it would take fishermen longer to catch the same amount of yield. You'd have, you know, more impacts on bottom time and so forth. These would have revenue impacts as well as fishing costs, because you'd have to fish potentially longer. So all of these things kind of link back to this effort shift, which is dominated by the meat weight differences, and this is sort of the cornerstone of all the work in the last 40 pages of the document. The PDT and committee discussed, so now that we finally have a way to kind of measure this, you still have to come up with a level, which again is completely up to the council or whoever to make, where do you pick this threshold. The PDT, for, you know, not any real specific reason, identified 10%. So we said, if you're talking about a restriction that would move 10% of the effort outside of the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season to some other time or place, that is a reasonable amount of effort that would have associated impacts on F and yield and revenue, but an amount that is not unreasonable. And there's a bunch of descriptions about the 10% and why people were comfortable with that amount. The committee reviewed it in November and again provided additional, support or consideration of 10% as a place to start. But again, that doesn't have to be the place that the council uses today, and it could just be sort of a on-the-side kind of evaluation of a potential threshold, but that's where we are. So there were four alternatives. Just to remind you, the PDT developed last year a model that would kind of track this shift in effort and track the changes in F and yield and revenue from these different effort shifts. And we used that same exact model this year for these specific alternatives and seasons. Alternative 1 and 2, if you remember, are related to a cap of days at sea to be used in the mid-Atlantic, and the alternative 2 is related to a maximum number of days of trips, of access area trips you can use during the turtle window. So when we did the analysis of those two at the PDT level, looking on average across the fleet using historical fishing pattern and data to guide us, it seemed as though any limit compared to what we project to occur in the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season, any limit at all in reference to what we project would potentially have more than minor impacts on the fishery, because the average trip usage by the fleet, when you average it across the fleet, is less than a trip. So if the average to start with is less than a trip, any limit on that would basically prevent, if you applied it that way on average, at least one trip occurring, and that had high impacts by preventing people to fish during that season in the mid-Atlantic. If you think about it, also on top of that, the reason the committee was uncomfortable with these two is they have higher distributional impacts. When we looked at the fleet on average, yes, it appears that less than one trip is taken during these time periods at open areas and access areas, but in reality, that's because the vast majority of vessels from the north don't fish in that area or season at all. So they're applying lots of zeros into that average when you consider all the vessels from New Bedford and so forth. Over 100, 150 vessels don't fish at all. whereas the vessels from the south are definitely taking 1 to 2 to 3 open area combined with access area trips during the season. So this factor, this high distributional impact assumed that would come out of these alternatives, the committee was very uncomfortable with them. There's tables in the back of this document that show you where vessels are likely from, which ones would most likely be impacted. And in general, those are the major reasons that the committee was not supportive of alternatives 1 and 2, because they felt that they had high distributional impacts, and if applied kind of across the fleet, the limit was going to be too great to start with. Alternative 3 is the seasonal closure in the Delmarva access area. And there's two options, again, the two-month closure or a one-month closure, September and October, or October only. And this alternative, when we put it through the same exact model, actually projects that you would have positive impacts on F if you limit effort during that season, as I was explaining, because meet weights during September and October are not very good. So if you restrict vessels and don't allow them to fish during those 2 months, and you assume that they then distribute that effort either evenly throughout the other months of the year or right around the months of the closure, which is what we have seen with this experience in Elephant Trunk, you actually get a gain in meet weight because the meet weights are better in August compared to September and October. And when you add in all the other months of the year with the spring and earlier summer even, you get an overall positive impact on F. So that's what these analyses showed. And what happens with the revenue, because you can still take that full trip outside of the window, the impacts on revenue would be zero. And actually, the way the model is set up, it is set up so that you always maintain the same exact F. And because you're going to get a gain in fishing mortality if you shift the effort from September and October to the rest of the year, the analysis actually automatically bumps up the possession limit to keep F the same. So in a lot of the tables, you'll see a gain in revenue, and that's linked to an assumed increase in possession limit. That's just for illustration purposes. It's not actually arguing that you should increase the possession limit outside of the window, but it's showing you that if you maintained F, how much the possession limit could go up to have the same F, and what that impact on revenue would be to be able to show you these relative impacts. The fourth alternative was kind of a non-starter. We did the analysis, of course, but the fourth alternative would be to just flat out reduce the possession limit during the turtle season and never compensate vessels outside of the turtle season. So you just basically say, okay, possession limit is reduced during the season, and that original catch could never be allocated again. So you saw from the results in this table pretty high impacts on revenue and reduced landings. So again, the model is focused on those things I described in the first bullet. The PDT, however, has a handful of other issues we don't want the council to forget about. There are things we can't integrate into this model, but they're important. Things like impacts on safety by shifting effort from this season to other times of the year, impacts on bycatch, other unknowns about the whole range of assumptions we've used in this model. We realize, you know, you can throw in a bunch of assumptions and come out with nothing very good if your assumptions aren't good. So we spent a lot of time working on those assumptions. But still, there are assumptions. Things are very uncertain about how much effort you could shift out of this time, affecting the supply, like Jim Odlin was mentioning before, during one season to the other. So there certainly are a handful of other issues the PDT has identified. The other thing I should probably point out, because PDT spends a lot of time on it also, is general effort levels in the Mid-Atlantic during the turtle season are much lower now than they were in 2003 and 2004 when this biological opinion, when the data was used for this. So you see at the back of the document, toward the end, there's a section about the trends of fishing in the Mid-Atlantic during the turtle season, and they're all on a downward trend. So that's for lots of different reasons. It's not worth getting into. It's in there for additional information, but it is worth pointing out that the bycatch rates used in the opinion, the fishery is actually prosecuting in terms of effort levels a lot lower than that in recent years. Excuse me. And based on your decision from before, would that trend would continue with lower days at sea? Okay. So that's the analysis. Again, I didn't do it justice. We spent a lot of time with this at the committee level. We really got into all of the assumptions, looking at all of the tables, comparing them throughout. I don't believe we have the time or luxury to do that here. So instead, I'll just put up the committee recommendation. When they went through all of these, they identified the third option, third alternative with option A, which would be a seasonal closure of Delmarva in both months, September and October, as their preferred alternative for Framework 21 to comply with the RPM. Document 3 has all of the committee motions with a long description of the discussion that we had about this motion, but very briefly, the general rationale for their decision was that this alternative has less distributional impacts. It still has, under the status quo, which is the scenario you just selected in your previous motion, roughly a 10% effort shift would be moving out of the Mid-Atlantic during the turtle season to other times and areas. So that is, you know, consistent with our general approach of what's more than minor. Fishing behavior responses are uncertain, so the committee was not comfortable looking at too much more than this because they, getting through all the analysis, felt that we really just still don't know. We've never done this before, and a lot of this stuff is very uncertain. So this sort of a comfort zone, if you will. And they just felt looking at alternatives 1 and 2 as other possibilities that the projections, they just felt that those restrictions would probably end up reducing effort more than the model was estimating. So in a nutshell, that's probably the rationale. There's more discussion, as I said, in Document 3 about their recommendation, but that's basically it. So that's where we left off at the committee meeting, and there definitely was some discussion at the committee level of trying to combine some of these RPMs. There was a recognition that the Delmarva option, while it will limit effort during the turtle season, it's not exactly a huge impact on the fishery. In fact, it'll have positive impacts on F and neutral impacts on revenue if the possession limit doesn't change. So there was some discussion of possibly combining some measures or new ideas to further minimize these takes during the turtle window. And the committee didn't really get much further than that. It was talked about. No specific motions were made. So at this point, does the council agree with the committee motion? We could consider it that way. Or since that time, I was directed by the executive director to consider some combination alternatives to respond to the discussion at the committee level that there may be some interest at the Fuller Council level to, with more time, look at some combined alternatives that would even further limit effort in the Mid-Atlantic. So there is an additional document we handed out today, Document 10, which includes staff alternatives, not endorsed by staff in any means, but it was requested that we do it, so there it is. And this is not a document the PDT has seen. This is not developed through the PDT at all. These are combinations of alternatives already in the document that are slightly different, combined together. And I can go through those now or just lead right into that, or if you want to talk about the committee motion first. They're basically combined alternatives with some general similar analyses related to them. And again, it was in response to the potential that at this level, people might want to look into some combinations.
I think so. We have everything on the table. Dee, if you could go into them now.
Okay. So does everybody have Document 10? This will be extra challenging for people not on the SCALP committee. Because we essentially did the same analysis we did for these combined alternatives, but without getting into a lot of the details about the analysis for the full group, it'll be hard. hard for you to catch up, but I'll try to do a little bit of background, but just in the next few slides, introduce what these possible combination ideas are. Some are more restrictive than others, and then I'll briefly summarize what is potentially, that's all I'll say on that. Okay. So, possible combined RPMs. So, starting with document 10, again, I just repeated the committee motion and all of the rationale and discussion that we had at the committee meeting on the first two pages. I've underlined a portion on page 2 to kind of give you more of a flavor of the concerns that were raised in terms of potentially considering further limits in addition to the committee motion. So then we get to the middle of page 2, and we're kind of at the point, okay, is alternative 3 sufficient, and are we content with the fact that it meets the requirements of ESA, or do we want to consider some potential combined measures? So staff, in some communication with the agency and others, we developed 3 essential combined ideas put together. The first one, and just to point out, all 3 of these include the committee recommendation. So all 3 of these combined alternatives would also close the Delmarva access area for both September and October. And then on top of that, you would have these 3 different strategies. And all 3 of them are based on a further limit of access area effort. This wouldn't affect open area days at sea. This would only focus on mid-Atlantic access area trips. The first one is the most restrictive, and that one would be to basically allow vessels to take trips during the turtle season in either Elephant Trunk or Delmarva, but if they decide to do that, their possession limit would be reduced. So we're going to only talk about full-time vessels at this point, just to keep it simple. If you have an 18,000-pound trip in Elephant Trunk in 2010, you're going to get 2 of them. If you decide on an individual basis to take the trip between June 15th and the end of August, so the 2.5-month period, if you decide you want to use one of those trips during that time period, you would have a reduced possession limit of 12,000 pounds. So instead of 18,000, you would get 12. You could take one trip in Elephant Trunk during that time period, or you could take another Elephant Trunk trip, again at 12,000 pounds. So again, that's 12 plus 12 being 24. You have to take the other portion outside of the window. So you can either take one trip or 2 trips in or out. But basically, you're going to have to take 3 12,000-pound trips, which equals up to the equivalent of 2 18,000-pound trips. Sorry about this, but that's what it is. So it provides an incentive to potentially not take the trips, to have a reduced possession limit, but at the same time, if you live near that area and you want to go in there, or for meat weight reasons or season reasons, price reasons, you still want to fish in there, you can, but at a reduced possession limit. This is a combination of the alternative in the document already, but it's an improvement in that it allows you to recapture that harvest outside of the turtle window, whereas alternative 4 before did not. So it has additional costs because it forces an additional trip. But in terms of revenue, you do get to reap that reduced possession limit on a later trip. Now, there's 2 options for this one. One focuses just on Elephant Trunk. You see in the next pages 2 and 3 describes it, the alternative in text. One focuses on just a limit in Elephant Trunk, ignoring Delmarva. Basically, you could take your Delmarva trip whenever you want, as long as it's not in September and October. Then there's a second option B, which is the most restrictive, and that's saying that you can, again, take any access area trip you want from June through August. But again, both would have a reduced possession limit for the Delmarva region. Because you only get 1 trip for that for 2010, your possession would be cut down to 9,000 pounds. So you could take 1 9,000-pound trip in the window, and you'd have to take the other 9,000 pounds outside of the window. We'll get into the analysis, soon, but in general, this one, because it potentially could affect both of the regions, 9,000 pounds is also a value that's really pretty low for a lot of vessels to warrant that steam time to go all the way to Delmarva from New Bedford, for example, for 9,000 pounds. So the analysis shows all of this, that those costs are higher, and likely even more people would decide not to go if they had those kinds of restrictions. But all the analysis shows all of that. The second alternative is a little different, but is also similar, in that you have the two-month Delmarva closure. But then the second part of it is that you limit the number of elephant trunk access area trips that can be taken during the turtle window. So you get two trips for the year, same as, you know, under the framework. If you decide that you want to take one of those trips, again, the cap, the maximum would be one. If you decide you want to take one trip from June 15th through August 31st, you can, but the possession limit is reduced to 14,000 pounds. Again, as a incentive to potentially reduce general effort during that season to help turtles, and also to recognize, however, that distributional problem to allow some access. If you decide to take a trip during June through August in elephant trunk for 14,000 pounds, you would then be permitted to take a trip outside of the turtle window at 22,000 pounds. So there's a lot of different possession limits with this one, but again, it's only two trips. So you won't have the third trip requirement as the alternative before it. So this measure has less impacts on costs because you're still just taking two trips compared to three. And these amounts, again, of course, we could look at different possession limits, but from discussions during development this fall of this framework, 14,000 pounds was identified as, you know, still a worthy amount to go for a trip. And again, 22,000 pounds, the remainder that you would then tack on to your second trip, wasn't too large that the vessels couldn't, you know, there wouldn't be any vessels in the fleet that couldn't hold that amount, for example. But again, there's probably some flexibility there if we decide and we hear that those amounts are not correct today. Okay, so that's the second alternative. Just to point out with that one, Delmarva's unaffected by this measure, so you could take your one Delmarva 18,000-pound trip whenever you wanted to, but not during September and October. The third one is, again, the two-month seasonal restriction in Delmarva, and this one has two options. It would restrict all vessels to either one trip during the window or two trips during the window. This one doesn't change the possession limits, so in that regard, it's cleaner and more straightforward, but it is restrictive in that you could only take one elephant trunk or Delmarva trip. There wouldn't be the ability to take both under option A for this alternative. So you can only take one trip from June 15th to the end of August. There is a second option to allow for two trips also under this scenario. So there's really three different alternatives, again, provided to a little more flexibility and possibly an additional control or limit, I should say, of effort in the Mid-Atlantic. The alternatives are described through page 5, and starting on page 6, we get into the results. In the interest of time, some people prefer text, so we've written out all of the results related to these new three combined alternatives in text form on pages 6 through 12. But I guess I prefer table format a little bit more. And the table format starts on page 13, 14, 15. And that's probably, it's a lot of numbers, and I'm going to point out only the ones you need to worry about. This basically is a table that puts all the results of the two components of the combined measures together. On the first page is related to the access area restriction. The second page is related to the two-month Delmarva closure. And that's the same across the board because they all include that. And the third page is sort of the take-home message in terms of the net effect of the two things together, what it will mean for reduced days at sea, what it will mean for reduced catch, revenue, costs, fishing mortality, effort shift, and so forth. So, in general, okay. So that's the table you want to probably look at. And again, there's more information in the text right before it. But, okay, let's just work through one as an example. Starting on table one on page 13, let's just look at alternative two, the one in the middle. That would be the two-month closure in Delmarva and the reduced possession limit for Elephant Trunk, one trip maximum in the window, and then the larger trip limit outside of the window. This alternative, if you look at just this portion alone, we project, based on historical effort, that of the 1,020 Mid-Atlantic trips that will be allocated to the entire fishery, that's basically the 340 vessels I was talking about, are each going to get three trips. That comes out to 1,020 trips in total for the year. We estimate that about 220 of those will occur during the turtle season in the Mid-Atlantic. So 220 trips of the total will happen. Under this RPM, we assume that the same 220 trips will still occur, but you would have that reduced possession limit for elephant trunk trips. And that's why you see a reduction in landings post-RPM. If you see slightly, there's a difference in catch, that of about 587,000 pounds. That's all due to the reduced possession limit on the roughly, I think it's 147 elephant trunk trips out of that 220. So out of the 220, I believe it's something like 74 trips in Delmarva we think are going to happen, and closer to 147 for elephant trunk. So that's the reduction in catch that you get. When you convert that into days at sea, you go down a little further on the table. It's equivalent to roughly about 275 days at sea. The associated reduction in days at sea used in mid-Atlantic access areas during the turtle window would be about 15% by this measure. And when you combine that with the open area effort, which is in terms of the RPM, the bottom line, what you're concerned about is total mid-Atlantic effort during the turtle season, you would get a shift of about 3.6% of all of the effort in the mid-Atlantic during the turtle window would shift to some other time or place. Now, the change in F value looks pretty low. That would be basically, if we have a target now of 0.2, if you impose this measure, you could expect an increase in F of 0.003. Seems ridiculous getting down to this decimal point, but it gives you a reference of, you know, this measure alone, what it would do to F, because we're going to be taking effort from a higher meat weight time to a lower meat weight time. Fishing costs, again, go up a little bit only with this alternative because of that meat weight issue. It'll take vessels longer to fish on that subsequent trip outside the window, but you don't see the high increase in costs as you do in some of the measures to the left, the first one, because you don't have that requirement of an additional trip. That's where the majority of those costs come from, because you're forcing people to have an additional steam time. We assumed that it would be a one-day steam time there and back for all of those additional trips, and that's what's driving that cost, you know, $500,000 to $1 million dollars for that. We're showing no change in revenue because we're allowing the vessels to recapture all of that catch outside of the turtle window. We recognize that there could be differences in prices during the seasons and so forth, but again, we're assuming that they will have the ability to actually harvest that catch, so there's no change in revenue. Again, a pretty simple assumption, though. What we do show at the bottom, which is another thing that could be considered, as I mentioned before, you have this small increase in F from this measure. If you don't want to run that risk of an increased F, you could adjust the possession limit. And outside the window, instead of 22,000, we estimate if you reduce it only by 500 pounds, you could make up that increased F difference. But if you take those 500 pounds away from the fishery, that is the equivalent of roughly $360,000 fleet-wide. So this hopefully is a full picture of what this measure could potentially do, again, completely based on assumed levels of effort to be taken during this window, which we fully recognize is a huge caveat. Behavior will respond potentially very different when these things are actually in place compared to the way the fishery has been prosecuted, you know, in recent years. If you turn the page to the second part of this table, this is a summary of the projected impacts of the two-month seasonal closure in Delmarva. This is already in the document, and we repeated the same numbers across the board just to keep things clear that these are separate. So these impacts in terms of days at sea reduced, estimated impacts on revenue, and so forth, are all related to the two-month closure only. So because there was an interest of some members at the committee level of combining basically the first half of this table with this second half of the table and being able to show overall what would happen if you did those two things together, we developed the third part of the table. I apologize for all the numbers. But the third part of the table now basically takes the net impact of those two things together. Just staying with the same alternative, you'll see now the projection of trips before the combined RPMs imposed and afterward, and you'll see some of these are in the net result less differences when you then combine the Delmarva closure again, because there were some positive effects of that closure. But the bottom line is, if you get to about middle through the page, the difference in projected days at sea used in the Mid-Atlantic access areas within the window is around 1,000 days at sea, you know, some lower, some higher, from these combined measures. That is equal to roughly in the range of 36 to 50% less access area effort would occur during the window of time. That's a substantial amount from these two measures combined. Again, based on all these same assumptions and so forth, but these two measures combined, that's the amount you'd get. You could compare that to what these measures would do separately. Just as an example, if you flip back to the Delmarva two-month closure, well, that one's actually a very high. That you'd, by closing it completely, you'd remove all effort that would have happened in that time, which is over 600 days at sea. So when you combine them together, you're getting about a 1,000-day shift. And the next total effort shift, again, is just to kind of complete this and keep it similar to the analysis we've done so far. An overall percent of effort shift you're going to take out of the Mid-Atlantic, open and access areas combined, and shifting it somewhere else. Again, the alternatives range from, 6% to almost 10%. So we're still within that range that we were talking about at the committee level. The changes in F, again, pretty minimal. Some of them come down to no impact on F because the first portion of this is expected to have some impacts on F. The second portion is expected to have beneficial impacts on F. The one in the middle that we're going through right now happens to still have a slightly positive impact on F because when you combine the two with the Delmarva, you'd still have a little bit of a gain. Impacts on fishing costs, again, when you combine the two, the numbers come down a bit for the first alternative because there are some expected increases or gains, I should say, from the Delmarva closure. Anyway, long story short, this is the net impact of all of these things. I have to keep emphasizing there are some major, you know, caveats about all of this. As good as our assumptions are, things could go very differently. This is all based on assumed fishing behavior patterns, which we recognize will likely be very different. The major ones to point out is that we don't know a lot about the Delmarva closure in terms of fishery behavior because it's only been open 1 year, this fishing year, 2009. We don't have the data yet to know how the fishery is distributed by month for that area yet. It's not available yet. So we made all of our assumptions based on elephant trunk behavior. It's going to be different. The areas are different. We recognize that. It's pointed out in the analysis. It's the best that we can do. But there are, you know, some major issues. We also assume that there's no change in price between the seasons. I mentioned this already. That's a big, you know, keeps everything level, but that's a huge assumption. So these revenue things could be very different, higher or lower, depending on that. And so, again, everything's based on projections and assumed behaviors, which, you know, is difficult, but the best that we have. So that's the combined ideas. I would just say the summary we tried to, in the text on page 12, summarize what all of these numbers actually mean in a few sentences for you, and it's on the slide as well. Alternative 1-2, the one that would have a reduced possession limit of 4 elephant trunk and a cap of 1 elephant trunk trip during the window, is likely the most favorable because the net impacts are slightly positive impact on F. I have to point out an edit, please. It says total effort shift of 13.7%. That's not correct, if you'll just cross it out. The table is correct. The third page of the table is showing a net total effort shift of 6.4. So that's actually, that was just my mistake. If you change it to 6.4, that's where you, that's your total effort shift from this combined alternative. And again, that's less than the 10% we've been talking about, but with all of these uncertainties, I think that was why at the committee level things seemed so constrained and high impacts, because we were shooting for that 10% value. So everything was designed around that, and that was making the impacts come back higher. Whereas now, if you look at this in, you know, a combined way, going down to something like 6.4, some of these impacts are, I guess, more reasonable. The effort reduction from the Mid-Atlantic, as I said before, access areas would be 36% less. So we're assuming benefits for turtles from that, you know, considerable amount of reduction. As I mentioned, there'd be minimal changes on costs because the fishery wouldn't have to take an extra trip. They'd be able to recapture that on a second trip. And essentially no changes in landings or revenue if, in fact, the council decides not to change the possession limit, like I explained, to maintain F. You wouldn't see any impacts really on landings, definitely. Maybe some impacts on revenue based on changes of season, but again, the model assumed that there wouldn't be any. So that kind of is scoring the best, I would say, from all of the different factors that we're looking at. The one that's probably best after that would be a combination of the Delmarva seasonal closure and the maximum of one trip during the window. The reason option B didn't function that well under this alternative, basically a max of two trips, is that when we looked at the previous behavior, that's just more than what we project to happen. So it really wouldn't actually be a limit, essentially, when it all works out. There, yes, would be some vessels from the south that probably might have taken two trips from June through August. Would have taken all three of their trips from June through August. But when you look at things fishery-wide, it doesn't function as a limit at all when it's combined with the Delmarva closure. So that's the additional analyses if the council is so inclined to think about something beyond the committee's recommendation. Otherwise, you have the committee's motion for preferred.
Thanks, Dee. Sally? Rip? Sally? Rip?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Deirdre, for going through that. The committee did not discuss this document 10 during its meeting a couple of weeks ago, so this is new to committee members as well. It reflects a solution to some of the problems that were in the initial document with alternatives that would reduce possession limits, and the impact on the fishery was too great for the committee to be able to make any recommendation for those to be considered RPMs to comply with ESA. Thanks for putting this together so that we could have some other alternatives on the table, even if it is a little late in the game. It's good to have this analysis in front of us. I'm going to make a motion that's kind of a combination of a committee motion plus incorporating what we have here, so it would need a second. I would move to comply with the ESA. The council will adopt alternative 1.2,
combined measures, Delmarva's seasonal closure, plus the decrease in possession limit in the elephant trunk area to 14,000 in the window and 22,000 pounds on a subsequent trip. And again, that's a combination of a committee motion plus additional measures that Deirdre just described and require a second.
David?
And just a point of order, didn't the committee have a motion that they put forward? Shouldn't that come up first? I don't think you can change a committee's motion when the committee had a motion.
I think you're right, David. So I'm going to ask that we put the committee motion up first and then move from there.
Sure.
Thank you, David.
Then I would move on behalf of the committee to identify option 2.7.1.3, option A, seasonal closure of Delmarva in September and October as a preferred alternative in Framework 21. Committee motion doesn't require a second. That motion passed unanimously at the committee. Deirdre described largely how we came to that discussion. Also, I don't remember if she mentioned this now, but there was a good discussion by some other PDT members about how this adds on to the existing seasonal closure in elephant trunk area at the right time of year, essentially creating a corridor during turtle season, adding to the seasonal closure in elephant trunk further to the south. So with that, there's the committee motion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In an effort to try and sort of segue as to where we are now, I would ask a question either to Sally or Dee. My understanding is that subsequent to the committee's action and voting on the Delmarva closure measure, it was determined that that was insufficient to meet the requirements, and that is why we have come up with the combined efforts which increase the turtle protection.
I wouldn't describe it that black and white. I think the agency was pretty clear at the committee meeting before you passed your vote that they were uncomfortable with this, that it may not meet, but I think it's a level of interpretation, and it could be interpreted that way or the way that the committee interpreted it, that this was sufficient to comply with ESA. So I think it comes into a little bit of interpretation of what is required, and it is a bit gray, but I think the agency was clear enough at the committee meeting that they would be supportive or interested in considering more, and I think that coming out of, so we don't delay this framework anymore, is why the executive director asked me to put some combined alternatives in front of you in case at the larger council meeting the idea of some sort of combination could be explored, so you would have the analysis if you chose to do that. But I don't think there was a black and white declaration that the first alternative, the committee motion, is not in compliance. I don't believe we have that input as black and white as you described.
Pat Kirkle.
Thanks. First, let me thank the committee, the PDT, and in particular Deirdre, for all the work that's been done on this, and especially the work in the last week or so to try to get us to a point where we are comfortable. The action that the committee took is of concern to us. The ESA requirement, the Endangered Species Act requirement, is that that the measures minimize interactions with turtles without causing more than a minor change in the fishery. That's sort of the simple version of it. Frankly, we didn't think that the motion that was passed by the committee fully met that standard and that we needed to look beyond that. So I appreciate that these new alternatives are in front of the council, and that we'll have an opportunity to talk about making sure in Framework 21 that we are in compliance with the Endangered Species Act.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given that last information, I would like to make a motion to substitute. I would like to substitute the combined measure 1.2 for the committee motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion on the motion to substitute, Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, relative to this motion, I think it would be helpful if Pat could help us, certainly me, better understand why the committee's motion does not, as she just said, minimize the interaction with the turtles. And how do we define that? It's still unclear to me from all the documents that have been provided how we would judge which one of these alternatives would actually minimize the interaction without causing more than the minor change in the scala fishery. So anything you can provide, Pat, would be helpful.
Well, David, I think that's what everybody's been struggling with, and it is particularly difficult because there's no quantitative way to define, minimize, and minor. So probably the best I could do is looking at the combined alternatives that have been presented to us. I think it would be difficult to argue that the impacts of, for example, 1.2 are more than minor. And we still have the question of whether it minimizes or not. And I'm not clear on that beyond that we know that it is certainly more of a reduction in the effort in the area during that time period.
Pat, could you point me to the document that you're referencing right now that enabled you to make that statement so I can be on the same page with you?
Sure. It's the document that Deirdre just went through, document 10. And I'm looking particularly at the table on page 15.
You're looking at the table on page 15 of document 10. And to help me out, what in this table are you referencing?
Well, the table is a summary of the change in effort. It's more than that, but I'm looking at more of the bottom half of the table, which to me reflects a measure of both the reduction in days at sea used during the turtle window, projected to be used during the turtle window, the change in F, and the change in costs and revenue. I think those are the relevant cells.
So you're also focusing on total effort shift in the Mid-Atlantic, AA and OA during the window. Is that what's influencing you to the point where you're concluding that the 6.4% total effort shift is not enough? Is that a correct interpretation of the nature of your concern regarding effort shift?
When I was referring to not enough, I was looking at the committee's recommendation, which is on the table before. This is the combined, on table 15 is the combined committee recommendation in addition to the revision to the possession limit in the elephant trunk area. And so my comments were that although it may be difficult to define minimize and minor, by looking at the numbers in this, it would be difficult to say it was more than minor, and it certainly minimizes more than the committee's recommendation.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I apologize, Pat. I just need to understand where you're coming from so I can, you know, figure this out. What numbers are you comparing? What's in the table on page 14, verses 15, that leads you to conclude that the committee's recommendation is not does not go far enough?
I'm looking at the effort. I'm sorry, I haven't looked at page 14 that closely, so I'm looking at the change in effort, the change in F, the change in revenue, and my conclusion from this was that this did not minimize turtle interactions.
I think I could try to help the confusion. The second part of this table related to Delmarva, the reason you're probably confused, David, and Pat also, it's saying that there's a 10% total effort shift. And it is confusing because this table is based on the window of time affected by this measure, which is just September and October. So it seems like a larger number. 10% is larger than 6.4, but it's saying 10% of the effort, the windows are different, and I apologize, it's confusing. This is saying that 10% of the window affected by this portion of the RPM, September and October, 10% of all of the access area effort, total effort in the Mid-Atlantic in September and October is going to shift. This window is shorter because this RPM is a shorter window. When you combine that with the first part, which is a longer window, June through October, the numbers come down. So you can't compare 10% here to 6.4% there. With what might be a more helpful cell is the days at sea. And perhaps in the Delmarva one, when you're talking about shifting 611 days at sea from that one with positive impacts on F, positive impacts on costs with these combined ones is more, I think now we're talking about 800 to 900 days at sea with some impacts on costs and revenue.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, that Deidre just made an important point, and I need to know where to go, what numbers to look at, what tables to reference, and specifically what lines in what tables that would enable me to make a judgment call between the original motion and the motion to substitute. Can you help me and the rest of the council find the necessary tables for comparison? Like, as it stands right now, I don't know how to evaluate the merits of the motion to substitute versus the original motion.
Sure. I think it depends on what you want to use. But if you go to document one, the main framework document, that's where we originally analyzed the original RPMs. If you turn to page 176, that's the table the committee had before them when they were assessing the impacts of this RPM originally. If you go out to the scenario you identified for this framework, no closure F of 20, which is the one we happen to use for this document 10 also, you can see very similar values for changes in days at sea, the same exact values actually, effort shifts, and so forth. Again, the only problem which makes it not completely, totally comparable is that this is the shift on the two-month period. Whereas when we combine the two, we're looking at a longer period. So I have to check with DeMet if somewhere in here is a table of just the Delmarva closure that shows you the net impact on the June through October period, because that's what I think you're looking for. I don't see it right here. I'll try to think about if it's in here somewhere else, if that helps.
Okay.
Thank you.
Dr. Pierce and others, while DeMet and Deirdre are looking for that, I just want to ask the service one more time. Is the, as we're looking to compare the committee's motion with the motion to substitute, which is, as you point out, somewhat cumbersome, many documents, many columns and rows, it's important for the council to understand the difference. But I just would want to ask the service one more time, is the committee motion something that, if the council were to go that in that direction, is it something that would be approved? Is it something we can forward on to the service with a reasonable expectation of approvability?
Yeah, as I indicated, I think given the information that we do have in front of us, and when we first looked at this, we were looking at the information that Deirdre pointed out in the main document, that, and given the other alternatives that the council considered but rejected, it would be very difficult for the council to argue that they've chosen an alternative that minimizes turtle interactions while at the same time only resulting in a minor impact on the scallop fishery. So I think that you would have difficulty meeting the ESA standard.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, again, while we're getting the answer, I guess what I hear being said by Pat, among many things, is that we should be looking at the percent reduction in Mid-Atlantic AA effort during the winter window and total effort shift in MA, that is AA and OA, during the window. Are those two rows the rows that really provide us with the most insight into whether or not we are actually minimizing the impact of the fishery on turtles?
Which ones?
That would be on page 15, for example. Percent reduction in the effort during the window and total effort shift during the window. I'm still struggling to figure out how to interpret these numbers. It's not the first time I've looked at them, but those two numbers indicate specific reductions, percent reduction, and effort shift. And so I look at those two numbers, and my first inclination is to find where in the original motion, the motion made by the committee, you know, where can I find the same row in order to make a comparison relative to effort shift.
Deep.
Okay. David, yes, you should be able to find a row to compare the first part in terms of minimizing interactions. And yes, you've identified the correct cells to focus on where you can learn how the measures impact minimizing interactions, the days at sea that are less and the catch that is less during that window, and how that translates into effort shifts. The part I think that Pat's trying to make that is not in those cells is the other part of this ESA requirement, which is you need to minimize up to the point where you don't have more than a minor impact. And she's referencing the revenue cells. And because at the committee level the revenue cells were neutral or positive, the interpretation was because they're neutral or positive, you can further minimize under these, in their interpretation, further minimize because the impacts are neutral or positive. So you have to look at the rows in terms of your interactions, but you also have to look at the revenue and cost rows. And in the new analysis, the revenue and cost rows would be further down. Changes in fishing costs and changes in revenue, those are still pretty minimal. There is an impact on cost. There could be an impact on revenue with this combined measure. It's less than the other ones in the document, but it's more than the committee's recommendation. You have an impact on cost and revenue with this combined. Not as high as some of the other ones, but there is, you know, you're getting, maybe the agency's more comfortable with this getting to the threshold, whereas the committee recommendation was neutral or positive, so the argument could be made you could go further.
Okay, thank you. However, I'm also influenced by the fact that you said a couple of times that all of these analyses may not actually bear fruit because they may not really be predicting what actually happens with fishermen's behavior once we get something implemented. So that was a very important statement, and I'm not minimizing the significance of the work you've done. I mean, this is an incredible amount of work that you and the plan development team have put together. So the change in the revenue, that table, that part of the table doesn't seem to influence me as much as the other estimates of effort shift. Once again, recognizing that may be just as hard to predict as change in revenue. So anyways, thank you for clarifying that point, and that helps me better understand Pat's perspective. Not completely, but I better understand.
Rick. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As has been pointed out already, at the committee level, it has been difficult to try to define and quantify some of the objectives and the impacts and try to define what might constitute more than a minor impact. But your staff and the PDT have done a tremendous amount of work at this point on this issue, and I would like to also commend Deirdre for putting together this most recent analysis. We didn't have the benefit of this in the last committee meeting, but I think what she has here in combined measure 1.2 is really a creative solution. And I think if you're going to modify the trip limit to achieve a reduction in effort and limit one of those trips that can be taken within that window, the most effective way to do it is exactly what you see here in 1.2, so that you're not having to take a third trip. By having to take a third trip, as you would under 1.1, fishing costs would go up dramatically, and I think at that point you are going to have a significant impact on the fishery. So I would speak in support of the motion, and again, I'd like to commend your staff for doing an excellent job of putting this together for the council.
Anyone else on the council? David.
Actually, I have questions and concerns. I'm not for or against at this point. I'm not sure one of my concerns is when you institute possession limits, you lower them, but you make people take more trips. At least in groundfish, if you're likely to have an interaction with something of the wrong kind, it's the first day you arrive because you don't know what's going on. And I don't know if we have any information on when the turtles are caught. I mean, do you catch the most turtles the first day, the second day, the fifth day? Is there any correlation between days on the grounds and turtles caught? That would be one thing I'd want to know. The second is there's in document 7, I've got so many documents here, 7B, under all these alternatives there are discussion of safety at sea and shifting these boats around, and to mention that some of the smaller boats, when you shift outside the summer months, there are issues for those boats. So I'd like to know, what are the size of the vessels fishing in these areas? Does it vary by season? And are we potentially, by excluding boats from summer months when it's relatively safe to be there, moving them into winter months, and if they're smaller boats and they don't not really have the capability of being there safely, we may be inflicting the maximum effect on people in trying to minimize something for the turtles. I mean, if we drown somebody, that's about as maximum as you can get. And the last question is, if we shift the boats out of these areas, where do they go? I mean, do they just move to another area where there's turtles? Are we actually having any effect on what we're trying to do here? I mean, if they just move them out of this area into an area where they got to fish more days to catch less scallops, it's more time with dredges in the water, and there's turtles there too, we may have negated any positive things we've done or perhaps even made the problem worse. So, there's a huge amount of information here. I'm very grateful for all the information I have, but I am concerned that the law of unintended consequences may kick in here, and we may be mucking things up worse than they would have if we just left them alone.
There were a lot of questions there. I tried to keep track. I think the big point with all of this is, yes, it's uncertain what these things could do, but we do have some experience with a seasonal closure in Elephant Trunk. That area has been closed for 2 years in September and October. And when we look at that data, what we learn is the trips that would have likely happened in September and October were shifted into August, November, and December. They didn't shift into open areas. They, in terms of those individual vessels, instead, they just waited, and they fished in August, November, and December. In terms of impacts on turtles, having effort shift in August is not ideal. Turtles are still there in August. However, shifting effort from September and October to November and December is good for turtles. Turtles are not there in the colder months. So because these alternatives have a seasonal aspect to them, shifting effort, they have to happen in the access areas. That's why the access area one's a little maybe more favorable in terms of controlling the fleet, because with open areas, we don't really know where they might end up going. But with access areas, they have to go to that access area. But if you restrict them by season, at least some of that effort is expected to shift into months when the turtles are not there, and that's where you'd get your benefit on turtles. Of course, we can't promise that, but because we're going to limit the amount that could happen in June, July, and August, that combination of the limit and the closure, you should have a net reduction. You would have a net reduction in expected effort during the time when the turtles are there, having positive impacts on turtles.
Okay, my last question was about the size of the vessels, and does that shift with, you know, winter and summer?
I don't know a whole lot about that. It is the limited access fleet, so we're not talking about the general category fleet and access areas, so they are generally larger vessels. I think because these alternatives still allow the choice to be up to the vessel, it's not, you know, just put on everybody. You still have the choice to fish in the season or not fish in the season by allowing some access. Hopefully addresses some of that safety issues and seasonal capabilities of your vessel that you could still do some effort during that time of year. And you still would have the spring in terms of May when times are better. In terms of the actual sizes, there are some tables in Section 4 that have the actual vessel lengths. But most of these limited access vessels do fish in all the access areas throughout the year.
Dave Preble, then Dr. Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am I'm still not convinced that the original motion won't work. I just can't get a grip on that based on what I have in front of me. And I'm wondering if we might want to restructure this so that we identify, take the first part right there, and then add to it something on the order of if this measure fails to sufficiently reduce potential turtle takes. Then also limit the number of access area trips can be taken in Elephant Trunk with a reduced possession limit if the trip taken between June 15th through August 31st. I'm not sure this is the way to go, but I'm uncomfortable about getting locked into something that may be more than we need. So I want to throw that. I'm not making a motion to that effect yet. I want to throw that out as a possible way to go.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, along the same lines of what David just said, I look at Table 57 on document number one, the entire framework 21, and I look at the NFNCF, the no closure, F20. Let's look at that one. And I see that in the column for September 1 through October 31st, pre-RPM, the estimate is 64 trips, post-RPM at zero trips, And when we translate that into days at sea used in the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season, it drops from 611 to zero. So I'm obviously still missing something here, because that represents a rather dramatic drop in days at sea and trips during the turtle season. Therefore, I would assume that that kind of a cut from 611 days at sea to zero and from 64 trips down to zero is bound to have a very significant impact on turtle take. So, you know, why isn't that kind of a reduction that's been offered up as the option from the, you know, from the Scarlet Committee, why isn't that enough? You know, what additional information within these tables makes the point that it is not enough, that more needs to be done? That's what I'm searching for, and I haven't got it yet. As it stands right now, I think the committee's choice was a good one, and that the motion to substitute is overkill.
Pat?
Well, again, this table and these numbers don't measure the reduction in effort during the turtle window. They measure the reduction in effort in September and October. The percentage effort reduction during the window would be much smaller than this, and you need to compare that to the impact on the industry. And here it's a revenue increase. So is the council telling me that they think they can reasonably argue that they have minimized turtle takes without more than a minor impact on the industry? And remember, the fallback here is not the council's alternative. The fallback is the RPM that's currently in the biological opinion, which says that effort will be reduced 30% during the longer window and 50% during the shorter window.
Dave?
I think hopefully Pat answered your question, but I was under the impression that the revised biological opinion struck that, and it's now vague that some limit would be, so that it's not like an automatic default. If we don't do something, that other thing would happen. If the agency's uncomfortable, there could be some other limit, but it is a generic language in terms of limit. That
yeah.
was revised.
Dieter's right. She's absolutely right on that. But of course, we revised it with the understanding that the council would address this in Framework 21.
Mary Beth.
Thank you. Actually, some of Deirdre's comments actually answered one of the questions I had about the difference between the percent effort shift in Table 57 in the document versus the percent change in the other document, and it is the difference in the window. So that was helpful. I am looking at the difference between measure 1.2 and 1.3 with option A max of one trip. And just to see if I have this right, option 1.2, you can take one trip during the window in elephant trunk at a reduced possession limit. And then your other trip you have to take at some other time.
With alternative 2, you could also take your Delmarva trip during June through the end of August if you wanted to. It does not restrict Delmarva when you have to take your Delmarva trip. Alternative 2 doesn't.
Okay, so we have three trips allowed in the year. It doesn't affect your Delmarva trip, except Delmarva will be closed in September and October. It does affect one elephant trunk trip, which you'd have to take it at a lower possession level. Then you can make it up at a later time. Could you make it up at an earlier time?
The elephant trunk?
Yeah, like say if you wanted to take that trip with a higher possession limit in March, could you do that and then take a lower possession limit in July?
This is one thing that we realized during development of this. The way I have it written in front of you is that you could take your 22,000-pound trip from March through June 15th or from November 1st through February 29th. The problem may come up when we get this to the agency is that this framework won't be in place March 1st. So I'm not sure if the agency would be able to say, sure, take 22,000 pounds before the framework is implemented, you might only, you know, I don't know the answer if they can do that. If they could, then yes, you could take a 22,000 pound trip between March and June 15th or November through February. If we learn that they can't, then you'd be limited to your 22,000 pound trip after this turtle closure.
So I'm concerned by that because certainly if that were the way the scenario went and your larger possession limit trip was later in the year and your meat counts go down, it changes your F rate, and that could have an impact, an unintended impact that's not here in the document. So that's one concern for this particular measure, and which is the motion. And then if you look at combined measure 1.3, this one, we again have the seasonal closure in Delmarva. We have a max number of trips from any access area would be limited to one. I'm looking at option A, which is the max of one. And you could go in either area, I'm assuming, and you just need to take your two other trips outside of the window.
Right. That one is more restrictive because you can only take one at 18,000 pounds, but you can only take one.
Well, I mean, I prefer the committee's motion in general and agree with many of the comments that have been made, but if we had to choose one or the other, because of the concerns about the timing of implementing the measures, I would be inclined to support measure 1.3, option A.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Drew?
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. First, let's look at what the status quo is right now. Going into next year with the motion that was just made, you're looking at 29 days at sea for this fishery and four access area trips. Hudson Canyon access area, or rotational area, is closed year-round. That's a large area right within the turtles' range. It's closed year-round. Elephant Trunk is closed for 2 months. With the committee motion, Delmarva would be closed for 2 months. So you have almost, I mean, I don't even know how many hundred or thousand square miles that is. They'll be closed for significant amounts of the year, right there and then. Then you have 29 days at sea to fish otherwise. Scallop vessels are going to be tied to the dock for over 300 days a year. There are museum ships that are at sea more than that. Think about that. For 300 days of the over 300 days a year, they're not even fishing, so not having any impact on turtles. There's a dramatic reduction from the 42 days at sea they were allocated for this year under the scenario. Add to that the knowledge that in this RPM, which hasn't come up in this discussion, only applies to the limited access fleet. Why is that? Why doesn't it not apply to general category fleet? The reason is the agency determined that when you made general category limited access and cut them down to 10%, that was enough of a reduction in effort from the 14% of the catches that they were prior. That reduction was enough to warrant no additional measures because they had limited their effort, and so you didn't have to do anything else as far as an RPM. What you've just done this morning, and combine that with community, that is comparable, if not more, of a reduction in effort than was occurred in the general category. So why does one part of the fishery get judged by this one standard and this other part of this fishery get judged by another standard? It's completely inconsistent. You should look at just the overall swept area that's been reduced. And the fact is, with 29 days at sea, the amount of swept area is greatly reduced, and impacts on turtles are going to go way down. And also, let's put this whole issue in context, too. There were two observed takes of turtles this year. That's it. It's a rare event. We have turtle chains in place. But once again, you know, we don't get credit for reductions in days at sea by the agency, nor do they give us credit for putting on chain mats and reducing impacts of takes. You know, we just give and give and give and then get no credit for it, and they ask for more. Which gets us to another point, a very, very disturbing analysis the agency is using by looking at the revenue impacts of these measures, and that if, God forbid, we have a win-win situation where something that is pro-turtle and pro-revenue, that's a bad thing. We got to do more.
I mean, think about the message that's saying. I mean, what are we here talking about? Are we protecting turtles, or are we talking about how do we hurt the scallop fishery? We're about protecting turtles, I thought. And God forbid the scallop fishery should benefit from it, but then we have to do more? I mean, how do you come out ahead in this? What is success? And that's a very, very disturbing analysis from the agency to think that if there's a benefit to the industry, then it's not good enough. Even though it does protect turtles, and that's the stated goal of this. We support staying with the committee motion. If you do decide to go to another motion, we would support 1.3 option B as being the most reasonable because, as I said, we've already reduced by so much the effort. Thank you.
Mr. Wells?
Yeah, Eddie Welch, I agree with what Drew just got up and said. You guys already whacked us for 10 days this morning. I mean, that 10 days is going to come out of that time frame down there. It's 10 days I'm not going to be down there. And you already took one trip away from us this year. So we're one less trip plus 10 less days. I mean, how much skin can we give?
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallowitz for the Fishery Survival Fund. Just to emphasize Eddie's point about the one trip, we got four access area trips. Wanted an analysis of closed area two. There's plenty of scallops there for at least a 10,000-pound trip. That's an area without turtles, large scallops. It would have reduced effort in the Mid-Atlantic. The Northeast Fishery Science Center person decided not to do the analysis because she was concerned about yellowtail. So that was one thing that occurred way up front that we're not even getting credit for that's reducing our scallop landings this year. The data shows that last year the fleet ended up fishing less during that turtle window. They moved their trips up front. This year the same thing is going to be happening. And there is an economic loss when the fleet is forced into smaller windows of landing. And there's going to be an economic loss when you force a vessel to go from an 18,000-pound landing to a 22,000-pound landing. That's none of that is in the analysis. So that's an issue. The prices are going to be affected. That's where the loss comes in, on larger trips and forced into smaller areas. So the elephant trunk area has been fished heavy. The vessels are going to probably, just like this year, try to get in there early to make their trips. June 15th, the lightship area opens up. Just about everybody's going to be lined up on that boundary because of the yellowtail issue. Then what do they have left? You know, the effort has been reduced. What bothers me is beyond what Drew said is that we've solved the problem in this fishery between the turtle chains and the new dredge design. We're not getting credit for it, and we're being hampered in trying to do the analyses to prove that. This is an unprecedented reduction. They don't even do this in a shrimp fishery, which catches 160,000 loggerhead takes a year. What I find very interesting and I'm going to be interested in observing is we've solved the problem in a scallop fishery between the chains and the dredges. You haven't solved the problem in the trawl fisheries. You haven't solved it in the gillnet fisheries. You haven't solved it in the hook fisheries. They're coming for you. And they're going to have to apply the same standards. And if you read some of the scientific documents, they're talking Georges Bank in the Gulf of Maine. So I think even the committee motion is too much, personally. I think the solution has to be gear. Because these turtles, the takes are going to increase as we rebuild the stocks of ground fish, of fluke, of monkfish in the various fisheries. They're going to increase in scallops when Hudson Canyon opens up. But it's not about takes. It's about the impact of takes. And that's where the gear solutions come in. We're reducing the impact of encounters with turtles with fishing gear. That's the only way out of this as the loggerhead populations expand. And they are expanding. Thank you.
Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Civil Consulting. Well, let me just point out, in 32 years of scallop and a lot of it done down in Mid-Atlantic, we had one turtle take, which we returned. Something had changed. There was a period of time where apparently quite a few turtles were being taken by the scallop fleet. That's also changed. As you heard earlier, there was supposedly two turtle interactions last year by the scallop fleet, and a lot of effort's been put into minimizing any impacts or any takes or any interactions. My main question comes in is, what's acceptable? And maybe that's a poor choice of words. How much do we have to pay back to make sure that we don't exceed our credits, much like the energy or the carbon footprint? That's almost what we're dealing with here. If there's an acceptable cost taken by the industry and it's deemed as being minimal, depends whose pocket it's coming out of, I guess, is when you start judging minimal or what's acceptable. But until that point comes, you don't seem to be complying with the regulations. What standards are we trying to reach or meet? And what is an acceptable amount of turtle takes given the resource that's currently out there? I've yet to see a figure on it. I don't know how you can move from one particular motion that was done through a committee action and committee deliberations with the participation of the advisory panel there to come up with a motion that was put before the council, and then because of a request for additional concepts, adopt a concept with no figures to back it, no science to back it that I can see, or at least that I'm able to see anyhow, and still not know what's an acceptable amount of reduction and what's an acceptable amount of cost. How do you come to a point where you can justify that and substitute one motion for another, like I say, that they've gone through full deliberation? Once again, you come to the point where you're throwing away your committee work that's done over a course of a day or two and doing it as an ad hoc committee sitting in a council meeting for a period of 3 or 4 hours. Thank you.
David, then I'm coming back to the council.
David Frula, Fisheries Survival Fund, thank you. I don't want to belabor the good points that have been made. I just wanted to go back to where we started, back with the RPM, which was either a 50% reduction over a shorter turtle window or a 30% reduction over a longer window of effort during the summer and fall months. That was deemed to be major. If you look at the chart, I hope I'm reading it right, on page 15 of the supplemental document. If I look at combined measure 1.2, I see a reduction in projected DAS use from 2464 to 1579. That looks like a 35% reduction. If I look at the projected reduction in Mid-Atlantic access area effort, that's a 36% reduction. I don't see that that's materially different in terms of that kind of analysis than what you were doing before that was ruled that you all thought was illegal and that really the service didn't push back on. It gets so additive after a while, it's, as Drew said, it's crazy. I guess it's a little better on 1.3B. You have an 18% reduction in effort in the window. And I don't know, 2464 to 2019, I mean, I guess that's my poor math skills, about 15%. So, I mean, that's just taking two trips during the turtle window. I get the other point is if you go with a 14,000, 22,000, as Ms. Tooley said, I don't know that you're going to be able to have any trips in Elephant Trunk until November or December, because if there's some analysis that says the council recommends 14,000, 22,000, but none of that's going to get implemented until June 15th, which is when the turtle window starts, then I don't know what the service is going to do. They're either going to have to put this in by some sort of emergency rule or grand turtle edict, or you're going to have to say there's no trips in elephant trunk except for a 14,000-pound one until November or December, where you get to pick up the 22,000-pound trip. And what will that do? That's when the meats are bad. You've taken that all out of the summer market when people are at the coast eating scallops. And to go back again to the table 57 on page, I think it's 176 in the document, and I think I have a question for Deirdre, because as I understand it, it shows gains in revenues and changes in F that are positive, and again, I know that positive is bad, but that assumes, as I understand it, that all the effort was going earlier in the summer rather than in November and December. Am I correct, that first table?
No, it's assuming that all the effort from September and October would be distributed based on historical effort in all other months. So from March, you know, for the whole year, by month in historical patterns. So it's assuming regular distribution throughout the year in all months, not in one particular season. I'm glad you brought us back to that table, though, because that's why I raised my hand before. I just wanted to clarify the point. I didn't communicate it well enough at the committee level. The reason these are gains and they're showing positive gains from the Delmarva closure is because that's the model's intended to keep F the same. I tried to point this out before. These gains are coming from an assumed increase in possession limit outside the window to keep F the same. We're not talking about actually doing that. So these gains in catch and revenue are illustrative to show you that difference in F. The fishery will not actually catch more and land more and get these revenues, because people have been saying win-win and things like that. These are to show you the positive impacts on F. You could have these types of gains if you compensated the possession limit. We're not really talking about doing that. We could, if you wanted to, actually, to keep F exactly level. But these, what in more reality, we tried to communicate it better today, hopefully, in the tables in Document 10, show that the revenue is zero. Revenue impacts, gains or losses are neutral, because we're assuming they're going to, you know, get that catch outside the window. At the committee level, I think people were under the impression, this probably wasn't communicated well enough, that these were actual real gains. But that could only come if we increased the possession limit to something like 18,000, you know, 600 or something outside September and October. Hopefully that helps. The other thing I wanted to say about Dave Preble, since I have it, I don't want to forget, this is a one-year framework. You were kind of leaning toward let's do something now, maybe reevaluate it, do it later. I just wanted to remind the council, this is one year. This is something we're going to have in our frameworks all the time now, unless the RPM is changed by a biological opinion. We will have to do this process every year, and we're not going to have the same thing every year. We're going to have to reevaluate this every single time.
If I may just make one final question through the chair to Deirdre. If the framework doesn't get put in place till June 15th and you're not able to take any elephant trunk trips, then the distributional model that you have on page 176 won't hold, because all your F will get pushed till November, December, January, assuming that nothing, you just can't go in there.
We haven't gotten the chance to talk to the agency how they could maybe do this, but our model in Document 10 assumes you could take a 22,000 for Alternative 2. You could take a 22,000-pound trip in March through June or November through the end. If this is implemented late, which it will be, I don't know what will happen with that. You still could take an 18,000-pound trip from March to June, because that's, you know, status quo. You could still do that. But you would, in that case, this may not be as positive, because you'd then be stuck deciding to take 14,000 in the window and then some other remainder later, or you would take nothing in the window and a second 18,000-pound trip after the window.
I don't know how they'd let status quo fly if they wanted to change from a status quo and it was absolutely necessary to protect turtles. So I don't know where we're. I think you better think about the regulatory trajectory here that y'all are working with. Thank you.
Mr. Brogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. I want to first thank the council and the agency for their flexibility and recognizing that there's a serious issue on this. After the committee meeting, we had real concerns about this this problem in light of the most recent status review for this species and this particular population that concluded that they are at risk of extinction. It was refreshing to see these alternatives. The range of them are they all have promise. We have some concerns about number 1.2, the one that's up here right now, that there's some flexibility, and in light of all of the assumptions that have been discussed, that it may have unintended consequences, the shifts of effort with those assumptions. If things don't happen as they're expected to, that we could have a shift of effort. We think that the more hard limits that are in 1.1b or 1.3a have real effects for both of the access areas in the mid-Atlantic, both Delmarva and Elephant Trunk. They both need attention. They both have a good record of, or a bad record of, turtle interactions. So 1.1 and 1.3, we think, are the more appropriate options here, and that this should be moving forward. We also want to comment that the action to address the access areas is promising and has some real effects, but there's also a need for the open areas. The biop doesn't make the distinction between access areas, the need for action in access areas compared to open areas. It talks about limited access, allocated effort. So there's a need for open area, complementary actions to address open area effort. So we hope that this will be part of a suite of management that moves forward, both in the access areas and the open areas, and encourage the council to give serious consideration to 1.1 and 1.3 and the hard limits for both of the access areas down there. Thanks very much.
Back to the council. Council members, Mary Beth.
Yeah, one of the things that I've struggled with, and I think most people on the committee have as well, is what's the baseline? Where's our starting point, and how do you measure what will reduce from there? And so just a quick question to Deirdre. These percent reductions are based on the previous year? I forget. I should know, but I don't remember.
No, we tried to avoid that because of arguments we made last year that each year is so different, and that's not really the most effective or accurate way to think about these things. These percent changes are compared to what we project would happen with no RPM measure in 2010. So you can think about it as no RPMs, this is the amount of effort we think is going to happen in this area in this season, compared to if you impose something, depending on what it is, this is the reduction or change you would get. So it's compared to 2010, not previous years. We use previous years to help us come up with these assumed patterns and catch levels by month and so forth, but we don't, the percent changes are with an RPM or without it. So you can see a direct effect of the RPM. So not compared to a certain time period.
Yeah, so there's no consideration of looking back and saying this is what the effort was and this is where we are today. Have we already, you know, had a reduction? So that's one concern. And the other concern is, I think it's been raised by several people, is that it's unclear where we're going. How much is enough? And we don't really have a good sense of any of that. And it's made the process very frustrating.
Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, to a couple of the comments that were made earlier, the original RPM spoke to reduction in effort throughout the entire Mid-Atlantic area. And so it's not comparable to the numbers that we're looking at on the table, which is a reduction in effort in the access areas. The number of takes that people were referring to earlier was the number of observed takes, not the number of takes in the fishery, which would be extrapolated from the observed takes. And I'm not exactly sure that that number was correct. Again, getting back to this issue that people keep raising, the standard is to minimize turtle interaction. It's to minimize. And the caveat on that, the constraint on that is, but you should not have more than a minor impact on the fishing industry. So in looking at the tables that we have in front of us, very few of these alternatives could be reasonably argued to have more than a minor impact on the fishing industry. So the requirement is to minimize. And no, it's not quantitative. It's not compared. There's no baseline. There's no number we're trying to achieve. We're trying to minimize. It's a little bit like the essential fish habitat yardstick, which is minimize impacts on habitat to the extent practicable. Well, you have to first look at minimizing, and then you have to look at whether or not it's practicable. And so we're in a similar situation. You first have to look at whether you've minimized or not. And then you look at whether or not the impacts are more than minor. So, yes, it's difficult, it's confusing, but you need to keep coming back to the requirement of the Endangered Species Act is to minimize turtle interactions. And one last thing, I can't actually remember if I said it, but we do not have the ability to adjust the trip limit unilaterally. So I could see where combined measures 1.2 could be problematic, given that we're implementing the framework late again this year. And where something like 1.3 might be a better option.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the maker of the substitute motion, my thinking was that we were in a position where we didn't really have that many alternatives, that we had to do something in addition to what was our original motion. That original motion was one that I supported at the committee level as well. Certainly after listening to the industry, my thinking has changed a little bit. I'm in fact wondering whether I would support my motion. I think the industry makes a pretty good point on some of the reductions that have already been made, and the motion that we certainly made this morning has the potential to reduce interactions and impacts. So I'm wondering if this is the right direction. And the one concern that I have is that if we turn around and say we support the original committee motion, we essentially are putting at least this part of the framework in certainly in some sort of jeopardy of not being approved, and what that ultimately means, I don't know. So I'm somewhat at a loss as to which way to go on this.
Rick Robbins.
That's a solo, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After listening to the discussion and hearing Pat respond, I guess, to the concern about implementation, it sounds like the ability of the service to implement option 1.2 in a timely way is at risk. And I think in light of the concerns that we've heard about that, the council might be well served by considering some of the other options, perhaps in 1.3. I was concerned about 1.3A in that it does have a significant additional impact. You're now looking at a difference in DAS used in the Mid-Atlantic access areas of 1,194 days. So it does have more impact. Option B in the analysis shows a difference of 445 days, and I think that might reflect, and perhaps Deidre could comment on this, but I think that might reflect the fact that they assume that there would be no real decrease in trips that are used. That is, they assume that maybe nobody would really use three full trips in that area during that window, but perhaps those options might be explored if option 1.2 can't be implemented. And I guess I am concerned, as Rip raised the question, about if we don't take any action above and beyond the committee's
preferred alternative, that this part of the framework might be in jeopardy, and at that point the service might substitute additional action or insert additional action that would not have the benefit of the council's review. So I think we might want to take a closer look at some of the options in 1.3 if, in fact, 1.2 cannot be implemented in a timely way.
Anyone else on the council? Sally?
Okay, partly because I'm hungry, but also because this material that we have is relatively new. We're just getting this today. Would there be, with, I don't know if the chair would consider taking a break so there can be some further discussion about the alternatives that were presented today, that the committee members can consider it in the context of the alternatives that we debated, and the rest of the council can, you know, consider the full range of alternatives that we have just a little bit more, so we're not pressed on something that has significant ramifications, you know, for protected species as well as for the fishery and for the viability of the framework, or at least for part of it.
I don't want to screw this one up, so why don't we take a lunch break right now? Be back at 1:30.